hook, line, and sinker.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Sunday, March 12, 2023. This is your award-winning Gimlet Nation Media Assassination, episode 1537.
This is No Agenda.
Observing day and night savings time and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where it's wet, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Thank you for that exhilarating weather report from northern Silicon Valley. It's wet. Well, it's wet in Southern California, too. It's going to screw up the Oscars.
Right. The Oscars are today.
Tonight, yeah. I have a report.
Of the Oscars?
I have a pre-report. Hold on a second.
Well, I can tell you who's going to win the best picture.
Tom Cruise.
Everyone, everywhere, everything, all the time. That movie.
Who is that by?
That's Chinese. It used to be a Chinese film.
Listen to this important report from... now, this was interesting. This is WION, so it's the Indian News Service.
Your friend.
But they cut to an Indian dude reporting on behalf of Voice of America, which is kind of concerning.
Oh, yeah. That makes it sound as though WION may be a front.
You know, this year's Oscar preparation is very hectic because in the past 2 days in Los Angeles, it's been raining nonstop. So actually yesterday, they have a lot of buckets lying on the floor to capture rainwater. And the Oscar statues, as you can see behind me right there, was covered in a rain jacket to prevent rain from like damaging it.
Whoa.
And, you know, this year, as you mentioned, is very different for the red carpet because it's actually champagne color.
Oh.
Now, according to the Academy CEO, Bill, he said that the reason for this change of color is because he wants it to be more luxurious, while Jimmy Kimmel mentioned that they wanted no blood to be shed in this year's Oscar, obviously referencing to last year's slap when Chris Rock was slapped by Will Smith. Now, this is not the first time that the Academy Award has changed its color from red. In fact, before, in 1961, before that, it was actually green.
Oh.
And the carpet itself is actually 152 meters long and about 285 kilograms, so it requires 18 people to actually set up and about 900 hours. Now the Hollywood stars will make their way this red carpet, but this champagne colored carpet, all the way here, all the way towards the Dolby Theater on my left.
I just love the stats that the commentators have. I love all these little nuggets of information. Did you know that the red carpet was once green? Oh my.
900 hours because of the union.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's champagne, not beige.
It's
champagne.
Beige. Champagne. I've seen it.
It's champagne. Is Moet a sponsor?
If you had a color, if you had a champagne with that color of liquid in the glass, you'd think somebody pooped in it.
Oh goodness. Oh man. Did you think that the Moët Chandon is a sponsor? Is that why it's a champagne, even though it's beige? There's got to be some tie into this. Come on.
Maybe.
There's got to be. Got to be.
Well, they usually serve champagne. Well, actually, not at this event. Are they going to do tables again, or are they going to have a seating? How's it going to be?
You asking me
report.
Entertainment television all of a sudden? Like I'm Ryan Seacrest? No. 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 And for those of you tuning in from around the world, as many do live on Thursdays and Sundays, big changes afoot here in the United States.
And it's that time of year again. Get ready to lose an hour of sleep. Daylight saving time is upon us. Clocks go ahead, spring forward at 2 a.m. But there is an effort to make the change permanent. A bipartisan group of senators has introduced legislation that would keep the same time throughout the year.
Over 15 years, we've been doing this merry little podcast together, and it's the same report every year. Well, we're gonna make it permanent. We're going to stop this insanity.
Yeah. Every year.
Every year. I actually didn't feel too bad this morning. Usually I feel much worse. I don't know why. But how did you feel getting up?
I felt okay.
Yeah. Now you have actually...
It's an hour later, though. I mean, I've had to do the show at 10 instead of 11. That kind of cut me short on my pre-show rituals.
Well, what do you mean? You didn't get up an hour earlier?
No.
Oh, you just wake up when you feel like waking up? You don't set an alarm and you just wake up?
I set an alarm for the same time. I've always set the alarm and I just offset the target time for the show.
So preparation be damned? I'm like, screw no agenda. I'll just work an hour shorter? Is that what I'm hearing?
So you'd, what you've heard. Yeah, no. You are saying to me,
yes.
You should get up earlier and ruin the pacing and everything you've developed over the years and screw up the show for me so you could show some, you'd be.
Yeah, that's what I'm angling for, John. That's exactly. Actually, I'm very happy that you woke up at your normal body clock circadian rhythm time. Because you're not as grouchy. In previous years, you're like really a bit.
Oh, brother.
And mind you, this is now one of the most dangerous vocations in the world. That's us being podcasters.
Now to that horrific crime near Seattle, Washington. A podcaster and her husband allegedly killed by a stalker. Police say a 38-year-old truck driver from Texas broke into the couple's home and shot them before turning the gun on himself, taking his own life. The woman had filed a protective order against him.
Why are you chuckling? It's not that funny. It's a dangerous business.
I'm not chuckling at that. I'm chuckling at the fact that what good does it do you to go shooting somebody and then shoot yourself? Nobody knows anything.
Well, that's not, I have a longer report if you're really interested, but this guy was, here's what scared me a little bit about it. No, actually, I'm going to play it for you.
Tonight, police say this man, 38-year-old Ramin Hodakaram Rezai, stalked, shot, and killed podcaster Zuri Sadeghi and her husband before appearing to take his own life.
Appearing.
The shooter is not detained.
A neighbor says their security camera caught the commotion overnight.
It was blood-curdling to hear.
Investigators say Hodakaram Rezai listened to Sadeghi's live podcast for people who speak Farsi looking for jobs in the tech industry and befriended her through a chat app. They communicated, but things quickly escalated.
This is the absolute worst outcome for a stalking case. This is every victim, every detective, now every police chief's worst nightmare.
ABC News has learned just a week before her death, Sadeghi filed a request for an order of protection against the suspect, alleging in chilling detail a pattern of behavior that made the 33-year-old fear for her safety.
Now, pay attention.
According to the order, Sadeghi said the gunman left her voicemails more than 10 times a week, sending flowers, even sending her husband more than 20 messages a day, writing, "He won't let me go."
There are many people who email me 10 times a day, who send gifts to the P.O. box, who say they won't let me go. You don't have this?
No.
No, not like that. I don't know. But it's any one of these people could flip in a heartbeat. You never know.
I guess.
You never know.
I don't know why. I mean, I can see that it's... I didn't know the background of this, but she's doing a Farsi podcast. This is already Middle Eastern politics, which is the most dangerous sort of politics.
Yeah,
I guess. Because everyone's nuts. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. No, it's horrible. It's a bad day for podcasting. Very bad day for podcasting. That's okay, because we're going to crack down on crime. And I'm not going to actually spike it. But I'm pretty sure that the ball I'm going to reference here is President Biden resurrecting the 1994 crime bill, which he was, as Senator Biden, was the
co-sponsor.
I think he introduced it. I don't know if he was just the co-sponsor. And this went hand in hand with front page. I think it was Newsweek or Time Magazine, even New York Times. Little Yummy. It was the predators, the 9-year-old predators, and we had to crack down on them. And then we got this whole Corrections Corporation of America, a real crackdown, arresting hundreds of thousands, mainly black men. And wouldn't you know it?
So, folks, look, MAGA Republicans are calling for defunding the police department.
Now, this is beautiful. I have to say, when it comes to twisting the truth,
lying.
There's nothing better than saying, "Hey, it was actually the MAGA Republicans who wanted to defund the police. It wasn't the crazy squad or anything like that. No, it was the MAGA Republicans." And he ties it into the investigation of FBI. So he's like, oh, it's law enforcement. It's really the MAGA Republicans. Whoever wrote this concept for him, which he somehow is able to get out, brilliant.
So folks, look, MAGA Republicans are calling for defunding the police departments and defunding the FBI now. That's a good one. I like that one. Well, guess what?
Guess
they refuse to provide funding that's going to keep communities safe and secure. We talk about crime. Well, it's outrageous. My budget invests in public safety. It includes funding for more training, more support for law enforcement, at a time when they're expected to play many roles. We expect our cops to be social workers. We expect them to be psychologists, mental health counselors. You know, more cops are killed responding to domestic violence calls than anything else. Do you know that? Well, folks, I don't want to defund them. They need more help. We don't expect a cop to be everything from a psychologist to a counselor. These departments need more investment in this kind of help. And we're going to fund proven strategies for accountable, effective community policing so cops know the communities they serve. And the communities know them. We got to get cops back on the street. Back on the street in the communities they know. Where they know the people, where they stop in and they know the guy who owns the liquor store. They know the preacher who runs the local school, the local ministry. They know the person who runs the local grocery store. When we did that in the Biden crime bill, crime just plummeted.
Yeah, you did that, Joey.
Because they know folks.
Yeah, they know folks. Yeah, it was very successful, your 94 crime bill. Okay.
It was a good investment.
It was a good
investment. He's describing some sort of small town America where the cops are roaming around on the beat.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Who, you know, does he go to this, does the cop just roam into the giant Safeway and know who the owner is? It's a corporation. It's not nobody there.
No.
Kidding.
Well, this, yeah. Anyway. It was, it's like, there you go. He's going into the 94 crime bill. And it's like problem, reaction, solution. And just blame it on MAGA Republicans. Beautiful.
Well, that's too much.
I'm stunned. But I have not heard a single complaint. Well,
there's a lot of fact check false. I'm sure it was all over the place.
Fact check false?
No, only on your No Agenda show. Sorry, people are way too obsessed with dying.
You've conducted a number of studies on the health impacts of daylight saving time. What has your research shown regarding the consequences of this practice on our health?
Now, what could the consequences of daylight saving time shifting have? We do this every year, by the way, except this year it's even a little bit funnier because we have, we still have COVID and we have
diet. Courage, depression.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So basically, our body has a natural biological clock that controls different processes in our body. For example, the sleep and wake cycles, physical activity, food consumption. And what our research found, as well as many studies from the world, is that if we disrupt the natural biological clock, it can increase the incidence of different diseases, such as heart disease, increase the risk for a heart attack, stroke, and even diabetes and cancer.
There you go. Heart attack, stroke, and cancer.
Oh, yeah. The same thing that COVID does,
coincidentally. Exactly. But depression-wise, there is, well, not really depression, but there's something going on TikTok. I'm going to save that. I'll save that for later.
No, do TikTok now.
TikTok.
Another TikTok update, everybody. Women... And all I found are white women, but women on TikTok are complaining about their Adderall, Vyvanse, or Ritalin. And if you recall, there was a while back, there were a couple stories that there seemed to be a shortage. Maybe that was during the supply chain, that there was a shortage of the precursors or something for Adderall, and there was some replacement. I'm not quite sure, although
replacement would be meth.
Yes, correct. They talk about it. It's D-meth or something. But what's happening is women, it's not working for them anymore. They're blaming this shortage, although Vyvanse, as far as I know, has not changed. And I think that we may be just reaching a point. If you hear how long these women have been on Adderall or Vyvanse, I mean, is it possible that meth at a certain point, just you just become kind of used to it? It doesn't work for you anymore? Is that possible? Do you know anything about meth?
No, I have no idea.
Well, I put
it makes sense. You get used to it. Your body says, "Oh, more of this stuff." Whatever.
I put a little super cup together for us.
You're 100% not receiving Adderall. Coming from someone who is diagnosed ADHD and has been on this medication since I was 9, I'm currently 26. I did some research because
9 and currently 20. So you've been taking meth for her whole life.
I haven't been able to function lately. So this is my bottle, and I swear to you, it used to say Adderall XR 20 milligrams, not D-amphetamine. When comparing dexedrine and Adderall directly, Adderall showed the ability to decrease symptoms of ADHD overall, and there was no evidence that dexedrine could. I personally think they're giving us dexedrine during this shortage, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, they're not working. I had to go take a drug test for my new job. And so, of course, I woke up that morning, took my Vyvanse. Like 2 or 3 hours later, I go do this drug screen. I just got my results back today. There's no amphetamines in my system.
Oh. Is it just me, or is anyone else's Adderall just not working?
Like,
I'm on like a 20 milligram extended release, and I feel like ever since everyone's been talking about the shortage and stuff, like all the new bottles that I get, I'm like, I feel like they only maybe work on some days, or I have to drink like coffee to like maybe get it to kick in. I don't know. Y'all,
I mean, I figured out why my Vyvanse isn't working. I was diagnosed with ADHD 10 years ago, and I've been taking ADHD meds on and off for 10 years, and this shit is different.
Okay, this is for anyone who takes any sort of like stimulant, Adderall, Vyvanse, Ritalin, Concerta, any of those.
Concerta.
Excuse my language. This shit is not working. I don't know what they're giving us, but it's not it.
I love how fast they're talking. Like they seem to be high anyway.
Not it. This isn't real. They're giving us a sugar pill, a placebo, something. Every single morning I used to take this. I would get like the instant butterflies in my stomach. I'd feel the need to go to the restroom, and it would be this extreme focus all day and like a terrible, terrible feeling right before I go to bed. A little bit of anxiety, and I couldn't fall asleep. None of that. Now, granted, it's helped my sleep, but that's how I know it's not working.
So there's discourse about ADHD meds not working lately, and there being like a national shortage. And I'm noticing it too. Some of my Vyvanse works, and sometimes it doesn't. So I'm gonna start making a chart because I'm on it right now. It's not working. So when it works, I can feel a come up, or just like I sit there for a little bit. I'm like, yep, meds are kicking in. And then I do stuff like make appointments, or clean, or do my homework, or read. And I don't make stupid little jokes constantly in my head. And I took it. I should have come up by now. And I'm thinking a lot of dumb stuff. So today's dose is not working, and they are from the same bottle. And but the other day it was working. So today I'm gonna go get my refill because Walgreens said I have 5 days to get it, or they're gonna just put it back. Because why don't they just automatically send us the ADHD meds? Like, do they really expect us to come get it? Anyway, I'm gonna make a chart, and when it works and when it doesn't work, and I will report back in approximately a month.
I'm sorry, I hear junkies.
I'm hearing. Yeah, you're hearing correctly.
Oh, this saddens me. I mean, it's funny, but it saddens me to no end. And these women are addicted. They're junkies. I'll bet you they're listening at 2.0 speed too.
Yeah, maybe. They're not listening.
No, they're not listening. But this is an epidemic. And so the minute if something changes, and I don't know if it changes. I mean, if you've been taking it since you were 9 and you're 26 now, yeah, okay, maybe you're just immune to it. It just doesn't work well enough. And that one lady said, well, you know, I take some coffee and I feel a little bit better. This, to me, is like, wow, this is sad.
Well, they could be right. Because I noticed this myself with certain drugs that I'll take once in a while. Over the counter, for example, naproxen, which is Aleve.
Uh-huh.
I find that the generic Aleve, the naproxen generic,
mm-hmm.
doesn't work at all.
That's interesting you say that, because when my when I had my my first surgery in my mouth, I could take ibuprofen. I got these big 600 milligram ibuprofens, but I tried an Aleve, an actual brand name Aleve, did nothing. Just nothing. And that was brand name, so I don't know. I don't know. Maybe the Chinese are screwing us over.
It could be. Or the Indians. Most of the stuff comes from India. Well, this Vyvanse, or whatever it is interesting. I never heard much about it before. It's
I've taken it.
Oh, yeah? What is it like?
Well, I took it once because...
For what?
No, to see what my daughter was on. She's not on it. This is a long time ago. This is 2011, I think. And she was taking Vyvanse. I'm like, well, let me try one of these, see what that's like. I was tripping balls. It's a time release. And I mean, that thing lasts 12, 14 hours. You just really, I got a little sweaty, speedy. I'm not a, you know, my drug has always been marijuana. My drug is the opposite of Vyvanse. I hated it. I can't believe anyone would voluntarily take that.
It's a variation, a major variation of an amphetamine. It's speed.
Yeah.
How do they get away with selling this stuff to the public at large is beyond me.
Well, I think this is the telemedicine. That's what I'm learning. The telemedicine systems, like the one we talked about, the one that Weight Watchers bought so that they could prescribe Ozempic to their clients and pretend like it's, oh yeah, it's our program. Don't worry, our program. It's what's working. In fact, I got a note from one of our producers. I'm over 50 and for numerous reasons can't lose the weight the way I used to. My last physical had me as pre-diabetes, i.e. I had to make a change or I will have type 2. And by the way, we're all pre-diabetic, trust me. We're all pre-cancerous, pre-dead.
We're all pre-dead.
My wife and I started using Mojourno, which is like Ozempic for weight loss. I lost 20 pounds in the first month. The cost is $300 for 4 shots. They're taken weekly. The diabetes version is about $1,000 a month and sold in special injectors. For me, it was a simple choice. Do this now or do it later with diabetes. So he's been convinced. We can afford to do this, we can afford to do this. In fact, the amount we spend is saved in not eating out. With these drugs, your appetite drips, and you really don't want to eat all that much. I'll bet the Vyvanse does that too. This class of drug has been used in Hollywood and by the elites for decades. Finally available to those of us in the upper middle class. Aren't you happy? He says, if I were blessed with great self-control of my eating, I would not be in this situation. I'm a realist. So Lee has given up. He says he can't do it. He doesn't have the
willpower.
The willpower, yeah. But these telemedicine health guys, these are the ones. These are the ones that are prescribing all kinds of stuff. And by the way, big story about Cerebral. Cerebral is another one of these telehealth apps. They got caught sharing millions of their patients' data with advertisers.
Oh, so much for HIPAA.
That's great. If an individual created a Cerebral account, the information disclosed may have included name, phone number, email address, date, blah, 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 blah. Online self. In addition, the individual has completed any portion of Cerebral's online health self-assessment. The information disclosed may also have been included in the service the individual selected. So they just sold that. Now, they're getting fined for it, but it's not like you're hearing much about it. Yeah. It's really nuts.
The allopathic medical system is out of control.
Yeah. Well, how about this? This is, you'll love this. Wall Street Journal. March is a special time for college basketball fans who kick back on the couch for days to watch the 2-week NCAA tournament known as March Madness. It has also become a shining moment for some urologists who see the games as a perfect time to peddle vasectomies. Yes, the idea of pairing male family planning with March Madness appears to have been very successful. Yeah. So how about that?
How does that work?
It's vast madness. You'll see the commercials, vast madness, along with March Madness.
I've not seen any of these commercials.
Well, they say it's coming. They say it's coming. Clinics are advertising vast madness. Recover on the couch, glued to the TV, guilt-free.
Oh, yeah, if you're going to be watching all these games.
Yeah, that's, you might as well. Baby, I want to watch the games. Don't interrupt me. Well, you can if you're recovering from your vasectomy. I wonder how many of our producers have been tricked into this.
I think half of our producers have had a vasectomy. That's why they complain about our reports.
They're about to leave us.
They have to back off.
They got really mad. It's like, you can't talk about EVs. You can't talk about vasectomies. You can't talk about any, I'm sure people
global
like,
warming's out.
Hey, man, I have ADHD. Just stop busting on my meth. Hey, you do whatever you want. I was a druggie for all my life. Marijuana, but still. Tobacco as well. God, I just think it's like, wow. They got a hold of us, man. They got us by the balls, literally.
Well, you did play a Biden clip. I want to get a couple of Biden clips out of the way.
All right.
Biden is not very good at math.
I just met, I won't embarrass them by pointing out, I don't have permission, but I just met a woman who has health care costs that are $600,000 a year, $7,000 a month. Well, guess what? How can you possibly deal with that? Well, we just dealt with it.
So that sounds like he multiplied by, he did an extra 10 times there? Or eight times?
Well, it says it's 7 and 6. It wasn't even that. It was some who knows what random number.
Who knows what he was thinking?
Well, then there's this one here, which is funnier, and he says it twice to make sure it's even that you don't miss it.
Morning, sorry, really a little late. It's all my fault. Well, look, I think we got a good jobs report. I'm happy to report that our economy has created over 300,000 new jobs last month, and that's on top of 500,000 jobs we added the month before. All told, we've created more than 12,000 jobs since I took office. Nearly 8,000 of the manufacturing jobs. That means overall, we've created more jobs in 2 years than any administration has created in the first 4 years. And I think all this matters. Yeah. It's no accident.
No. Goodness. You're still mass bumping. I don't know why.
Oh, sorry. That was my fault. Yeah. I knew I did that. I just got to be careful.
Well, the jobs.
So that's Biden's ability to calculate. Analyze.
Yeah. Well, jobs are going to change pretty soon. I'm going to have a lot more unemployed. I've been following the Silicon Valley Bank closure. I wouldn't say collapse.
Yeah, a lot of people are blaming Peter Thiel. Did you get that far?
Oh, I got much further than that.
Oh, we'll take us there.
Okay. Well, first of all, whenever I get an email from Andrew Horowitz saying, yeah, this could be pretty big, I pay attention. And Horowitz, he's a pretty level-headed guy. He doesn't really go too nuts. Well, I have two reports, and then I 100% 5x5 agree that Peter Thiel started the bank run. But let's listen to some of the mainstream reporting. Here's ABC.
From New York to California today, panicked customers scrambling to pull their money out of Silicon Valley banks, only to find them closed.
All our money is in the bank. I don't know how we're going to do our payroll. I don't know what we're going to do now.
It's the biggest bank failure since the 2008 financial crisis. Regulators this morning shutting down and seizing the assets of the bank, a go-to lender to the tech industry. Many of those businesses today cut off from their cash.
I hope we get most of it back, but yeah, it's definitely a concern.
It all came crashing down in just 48 hours. As the bank tried to shore up its finances, the panic only spread on Wall Street. The bank's stock plunged and customers started pulling their money out.
Once that happens, it's just inevitable it's going to fail.
High interest rates have left many tech companies with less cash on hand, forcing them to withdraw more to meet their expenses.
This is a bank, perhaps a handful of banks that are getting nailed by the fallout from the problem in the tech sector. And it's not a economy-wide or a banking system-wide problem.
We pressed the White House on what this means for the tech world.
How concerned are you that we could see a ripple effect just throughout this specific sector?
I just want to reemphasize that we are in a fundamentally different position, that you know, with the reforms of the global financial crisis of 2007, 2008, we've put in place stress tests and other tools that our regulators have to provide more resilience to our banking system.
All right. So what happened here is not crypto related, although there are some, there's some exposure there with a stablecoin USDC, which I fully expect to collapse because stablecoins are crap. What happened here is really, yeah, the big banks, the big four, too big to fail. They had to overcapitalize. They've been stress tested. But all the other regional banks, smaller banks like Silicon Valley Bank, they actually argued. The CEO of Silicon Valley Bank argued to weaken regulations. And I believe since COVID, they didn't even have to have 10% of reserves. And the biggest problem for that is almost a classic idiot bank move. Is they invested in bonds that you have to hold to maturity. HTM is what it's called. That means you can't just sell them off. So they had a lot of these bonds, which are, because the interest rates have gone up so quickly, and as we know, prices of bonds work inversely to interest rates. That means they're worth less money if you want to go and sell them. And this went so fast, which is what you know, our Federal Reserve has been doing, that they found themselves overexposed, like $1.8 billion, and they started selling these unprofitable bonds. That's when Peter Thiel, on Wednesday, I think, told all of his portfolio companies, so I don't know how many of those are, it could be 10, could be 20, could be 100, but these are companies that he's invested in either directly or through maybe one of the venture capital firms. He started calling everybody, say, take your money out, take your money out, take your money out. That is what triggered an actual run on the bank when everyone's going, oh, crap, let's take our money out. And they didn't have the cash on hand. They were $900 million short and just couldn't give anybody the cash. This was, I guess, kind of expected. The regulators came in and shut it down. And the way these things work is if you, every bank account in America, if it's an FDIC bank, which I think they all are, they are insured up to $250,000 per account. So on Monday, if you had $1 million in an account, you'll get $250,000 at minimum. That's what's going to, and whatever else happens, we're going to see. Before we move any further into some of the details, the way Silicon Valley works, and I've witnessed this twice. Once when I took my company public in 1996, we took it public with a brown shoe, small New York firm, but we went around to the big companies, and they immediately bring in Wilson Sonsini, which is Silicon Valley's law firm, very, very famous. I think is it Wilson or Sonsini who is kind of like called the godfather of Silicon Valley?
Yeah, one of the two.
Yeah, you may know that better than I do. And that's, you know, and they'll run, you know, deals through, they'll play on both sides of deals. It's incredible what kind of a monopoly they have. But when we raised money from Sequoia Capital, Kleiner Perkins, Sherpalo, Ram Shriram, but the main two were Sequoia and Kleiner Perkins, immediately as a covenant in the deal, and you're going to bank at Silicon Valley Bank. And if you remember, you and I bought a lot of lunches and wine with an SVB credit card. And so the way it kind of works is they have their money at SVB, or at least chunks of it. And, you know, okay, we're going to raise this money. You get the money. And it really is just transferred from one Silicon Valley Bank account to the next one. And because you are in this trusted circle, which the bank connects everybody, you can then get easy debt financing. Oh, you need a $2 million line of credit. No problem. And so it's very incestuous. And I'm pretty sure a lot of the owners of the bank, shareholders of the bank, were the same people. So a lot of, yeah, just incestuous exposure. And because of this, they say 50%. I would say maybe 75% of every single venture capital-backed firm, not just in Silicon Valley, We're talking firms in Sweden, in Denmark, in the Netherlands, in the UK, everywhere. If you raise money through a big, even not even a big one, but one of the 350 or 400 venture capital firms, you're going to have a bank account at Silicon Valley. So this is going to create a large culling of the herd.
Big time.
Yeah, because payroll, you know, coming up on the 15th, payroll money had already been sent into Silicon Valley Bank or sent or was supposed to be sent from it to the payroll companies. They didn't go out. So now people aren't going to get paid. Obviously, there's a lot of companies that are, or I'd say the majority of venture capital backed companies are not profitable. They had, you know, they already had to fire people, rein stuff in because, you know, it's going to be tough. If you're based on advertising, you may not make any advertising money for the next 4 years. So how are you going to get through? They got a line of credit from Silicon Valley Bank. That's everything's dried up. So we're going to see firms collapsing in the next few days, in the next few weeks. Let's go to CBS.
Following the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank this week, officials in Washington are expressing concern.
When banks experience financial losses, it is and should be a matter of concern.
Silicon Valley Bank is the 16th largest in the country, with $209 billion in total assets late last year, according to the FDIC. The bank is known for serving tech startups and venture capital firms.
Silicon Valley Bank failed largely because of its links to the tech industry, because tech is getting nailed by...
I'm sorry?
Says it failed because of its links to the tech industry.
Oh, no, no. You're going to hear every single...
Bull crap.
You're going to hear all kinds of bullshit stuff in the next few days.
Largely because of its links to the tech industry, because tech is... getting nailed by all the rise in interest rates and change in consumer preferences.
On Friday, state regulators shut down the bank.
You want to comment? I'm happy to stop. You want to comment?
No, I'm just saying this guy's, whoever this analyst is full of crap.
surprise.
A rise in interest rates and change in consumer preferences.
On Friday, state regulators shut down the bank, transferring control of its assets to a new institution controlled by the FDIC. In a statement, the agency said customers would be able to access their funds no later than Monday morning, but it only insures deposits up to $250,000. The bank serves some major companies like Roku, Pinterest, Shopify, and Etsy, which warn sellers that some deposits may be delayed. Small business owner Amber Fields now swept up in the chaos.
I'm a mom of three. I run a small business. I do this from my home. Those funds feed my family and pay my bills.
The effect is also being felt overseas, with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying his government will take steps to assist businesses that are impacted.
Ah, yes, I should have mentioned Israeli companies as well, of course. There's a lot of investment from Silicon Valley in Israeli companies. So it's going to affect a lot. Now, here's a couple of fun little things. Silicon Valley Bank CEO Greg Becker, he actually, until this happened, he was on the board of directors for the San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank. I think it was the chief operating officer. He actually was at Lehman Brothers when it collapsed. So, you know, they were very involved in diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, focused on lots of important things like that. And meanwhile, they just were exposed to all kinds of problems. Now, what this also did, and hasn't been mentioned that much, but will be, is it made people around America certainly nervous about regional banks. And regional banks, just like Silicon Valley Bank, did not have to have the same type of overcapitalization that the big, you know, too big to fail banks have. And so their stocks were down. You will see what happens. But what is happening this weekend is people are, you know, their bank runs happen because people have no faith. It may not even be an actual problem with the bank. So if people are just saying all weekend long, oh man, you know, the regional bank can go down, better get your money out of the bank. There could be a run on regional banks, and that could actually be very serious. But it's not because there's necessarily anything wrong. Now we go to CNN. who literally could not get anyone better than Robert Reich to explain it to us.
What does this mean for people outside of the Silicon Valley Bank universe? What does this mean for the average borrower, if anything?
So far, it doesn't mean anything, but the big question is one of contagion. That is, what we saw in 2008 was when one big bank and a couple of others started to fail, could not pay their depositors, could not actually pay up what they owed. They were closed, and regulators had to move in very, very quickly. But we ended up with a financial crisis because, one big banking card easily starts tipping over other cards. It's a house of cards. Now, we don't know yet about contagion. What we do know is that this bank was obviously overextended. And this is related to the Fed, because as interest rates went up and this bank was lending to a lot of startups, this bank simply could not handle it. I think that this is the biggest economic news today. It is not this jobs report. The jobs report was good, and it's kind of signals to me a soft landing. But I think that in terms of what the Fed is going to do, this bank implosion, this potential contagion, may reverse Jerome Powell's direction. It may lead to, instead of a half a point increase at the March meeting, it may lead to no increase at all. In fact, it's even conceivable that interest rates start dropping. The fear that we're going to be in deep trouble.
So I'm sure this is what a lot of people, certainly in the tech sector, would love. Hey, let's get that quantitative ease. Let's get money cheaper again. We need to have cheap money, which, of course, will only result in higher inflation for, for the prices for your groceries, etc. And so now we're in the what are we going to do phase. And we've got typically, they can find a buyer for a bank like this, like JP Morgan Chase would be a good one. They get it for almost nothing. And anyone who had money in there might lose 10%, maybe more. That depends on the deal that they cut. But already, Washington and Silicon Valley are talking about a special vehicle, the Federal Reserve. We need a bailout. This is going to be interesting. If the Federal Reserve forces, however they do that, forces a bailout, and this is really only $100 billion. I mean, the money we gave to Ukraine could fix this problem. But if you start going down that road, who knows where it's going to end up?
You have advocated for the Fed to stop increasing the interest rate. Why? Before this issue with Silicon Valley Bank.
Simply because I don't see any wage price inflation. Wages, according to Jerome Powell, are pushing up prices. Well, that's simply not the case. Look at today's report, for example. We're seeing the smallest wage increase in over a year. Prices continue to rise. That is absolutely true. But wages are not pushing them up. It's not that workers are doing so wonderfully well. But what's pushing up many prices domestically is big companies that want to increase their profit margins. And so they have monopolies or near monopolies, oligopolies. They are using the opportunity, using inflation as an excuse to put up their prices. So this is at its bottom here. It really is an antitrust monopolization issue. It is not a Fed interest rate problem.
The venture capital firms, 350 of them, have written an open letter say that, hey, we'll work with any new owner if you find one, but we get stories like this. More than 60%, John, of community solar financing involves Silicon Valley Bank. We will not be able to stop climate change if these companies go out of business.
Oh, brother, this is a good one.
Oh, yeah. Wait for it. You can just wait for that to happen. It's like, oh, no, and none of these companies are making any money. And they're not supposed to. That's why they're venture funded. But it also may just be a great moment for the venture capital money companies to write off a whole bunch of really bad investments, because everyone's just looking for, it's a crapshoot. Yeah, let me get the next unicorn. Yeah, we'll invest in that, invest in this. It's been very fun to watch Jason Calacanis. He's now tweeting in all caps. He's beside himself because he He's like an angel investor, and his whole, it's a very simple process, but basically he gets people to give him money. He invests their money, and then he pitches those companies to actual venture capital firms. I'm kind of giving an abbreviation. So he's holding a bag. I mean, he not personally, but his investors are going to be holding a big bag of crap. Now, when something like this happens, I am typically all ready to jump in and say, ha ha, this is how they introduced the central bank digital currency. I do not have to do that because everyone else is doing it for me, like General Flynn.
I want people to go read Executive Order 14067. Executive Order 14067, signed by Uncle Joe, the 8th of March of 2022, and it went into effect 13 December 2022, so just this past December. And there are already corporations and elements of our U.S. government that are already beta testing what's called central bank digital currency. Central bank digital currency. That's what that executive order is all about.
And this was accentuated on Friday on Tucker's show, which I do not watch anymore, but the people sent me the clip, so how could I avoid? Kristi Noem, who was the governor of, what is she, South Dakota? I think she's South Dakota. Yep. And she mentioned that the UCC update, in fact, Article 9, UCC is the Universal Commercial Code, I think. It's something that originates with lobbyists in Washington, D.C. It goes to the states. The states have to ratify it. States, just like any other politician, you know, hey, you want, what, I just ratify this? How much you give me for my reelection campaign? 10 grand. Okay, yeah, fine. It's too complicated to read anyway. She vetoed this in the South Dakota bill that was passed by the lawmakers.
I became aware of this bill. It wasn't introduced until almost halfway through our legislative session. We started reading through this bill that was over 110 pages long. It was sold as an update to the guidelines of the Universal Commercial Code, backed by all of our financial institutions, our banks. As we started reading through it, we saw the section of the bill that changed the definition of currency. And essentially what it did was pave the way for a government-led CBDC, and it also banned any other form of cryptocurrency or Bitcoin or digital currency that existed. So for me, it very clearly was a threat to our freedom. In South Dakota, we are the session that completes its business earliest in the year. We are the first ones to really look at this bill and find out the truth of what's in it. And I did veto that bill. I'm asking my legislators to change their minds, to make the right decision and help me kill this bill once and for all. But I'm telling you, Tucker, we've got the same language coming to over 20 other states. I believe it's to pave a way for the federal government to control our currency and thus control people. It should be alarming to everyone, and it's being sold as a UCC guidelines update. There's no rush to do this. We need to be smart and make sure that we're doing what we can to protect people. I find it ironic that we also are having this discussion at the same time we have banks and credit card companies talking about coding gun and ammunition in a separate code so they can track it. So not only can they tie these two issues together, if the government doesn't approve of what you're purchasing, if they have the only form of digital currency out there and that is endorsed and utilized in the country, they can control how you spend that money and thus take away all your freedom.
So from a perspective of what does that mean for you at home? First of all, don't panic. If you have more than $250,000 in one bank account, what are you doing? Someone should have advised you differently. So I think the FDIC insurance, although there was, if you recall, about a year and a half during COVID, there was a whole shuffle at the top of the FDIC. They kicked out the chairman of the board and they brought in some woke crazy people. So who knows what's going on there? If this could be a part of anything, I don't know. I do not think this is going to be the introduction of central bank digital currency this particular moment. It's possible you could go to sleep. It's great that it happens over the weekend. All these things are always supposed to happen over the weekend. You might wake up with, instead of, you know, dollars, Fetty coin or Fetty dollars. It wouldn't mean that much to you, except of course for the obvious control that could be implemented. It is interesting, as a side note, that Elon Musk has, you know, openly been entertaining the idea of maybe buying Silicon Valley Bank. I don't think he will. It seems like a hassle. He's getting his licenses to do so anyway, to to create the X.com that he's always dreamed of. But that would be an interesting thing for to happen. So just sit tight and don't panic is what I would say. But it's clear that we're being set up for something like this in the future. And that's my report.
Well, it's a good report. I don't think we're being set up for anything necessarily. I just think this was a stupid idea to have everything concentrated in this one SIVB because of the entire valley being somewhat corrupt in that manner. What's the point of having every company in Silicon Valley and every individual and every payroll go through this one single bank without backup?
We may find out. Who knows? I mean, you don't really know, but it was
just got to be corruption involved. There's no other possibility.
Of course. And it was so clear.
Why should my venture capitalist tell me what bank to work with?
Do you want the money, son? We had covenants in our deal. We had.
Yeah, I'm saying, but why?
Well, because I think that they were all they were shareholders.
Yeah, that would be it. That's called corruption.
It's called coercion. I don't know if it's corruption, but I don't know. We'll see how bad it will certainly be a culling of a lot of crap that needed to go anyway. It simultaneously helps the Federal Reserve with exactly what they've been complaining about. Like, well, the job market's too strong. We got to have more unemployment. Maybe this will help. I don't know how many people will be unemployed with the collapse of many companies.
We'll know in 60 days.
And maybe even less. I think this will be the story for the next week. And we'll just have to pay attention because it's very possible someone or some people will be really pushing the fear. And I don't see, you know what? Tonight at the Oscars, if there's a lot of Silicon Valley Bank jokes, then you'll know that it's coming.
I don't think they can deliver a joke.
Hey, they can change the carpet.
Yeah. I think the carpet was on sale. What are we going to call this dog shit brown carpet?
Champagne.
Well, we got it cheap.
Champagne, my dear friend. Champagne. If they're going to do anything wild with central bank digital currency at whatever level, whatever version, it won't happen until the Ukraine war is over. I think that's what I'm waiting for.
Well, let's listen to some Ukraine clips. I have a bunch.
Oh, good.
The War of Logistics clips. I consider these five clips to be an excellent backgrounder on, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. It seems as though they're looking at this war as some way to stress test the defense industry in some way.
Oh.
Because they can't make enough stuff. For these Ukrainians, these guys are unbelievable. But let's go with Ukraine War of Logistics 1.
It's been 80 years since a war with logistics on this industrial scale. Ukraine fires as many 155 millimeter artillery rounds.
Now, who is this from? Who did this report? Because I like that editing right off the bat.
This is, that may have been me. This is NPR.
Ukraine fires as many 155
millimeter. Oh, wait, stop. Throughout this report, there are scattered some really new explosions and rocket launches and machine guns. And he's talking to one guy in an office and you're hearing this stuff. It's like Washington, D.C. is under attack.
I had this. That's the new Ukraine war sound effect we picked up earlier. So we'll see if they use that one.
Ukraine fires as many 155 millimeter artillery rounds in about 5 days as the U.S. produces in a month. Many of them are forged. Finished at 1500 degrees and painted here, a 1950s factory in Scranton, Pennsylvania. The machinery is decades old, but until now it suited U.S. needs. Iraq and Afghanistan were not dueling artillery battles. But today, the 20,000 artillery shells the plant creates every 30 days is a fraction of Ukraine's needs. Ukraine's defense minister, Alexei Reznikov, recently wrote to the European Union in a letter described to PBS NewsHour that Ukraine can only fire one-fifth of what it could because of munitions shortages. We saw that ourselves on the outskirts of Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine. This team told us they did not have enough artillery to fire constantly. Alexander commands an artillery unit in the 93rd Brigade.
Do you have what you need in order to complete this fight?
We do have equipment, but we need more. And we need more and more and more, because they won't stop until we stop them.
The current rate of Ukraine's ammunition expenditure is many times higher than our current rate of production.
Last month, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said defense industry couldn't deliver fast enough and had to expand quickly.
This is now becoming a grinding war of attrition, and a war of attrition is a war of logistics.
Yeah, no one wants to pony up. We're just not making the old
we're
ammo.
We're ponying up as much as we can.
Yeah, in Scranton.
Now the coincidentally,
our president's home.
So, what's the last war of attrition that we've had in the last 100 years?
What is in this context? What does attrition mean?
That means you just keep killing people.
Iraq.
World War One. That was the classic war of attrition. There was nothing, no strategy. There wasn't anything. You're just killing everybody as fast as you can. They kill as many as you can, and they can. I mean, they kill as many as they can. You kill as many as you can, and that's the attrition we're talking about, people. So this is basically a war of a war of attrition where you just keep killing. This is a killing mess. This is a World War One style. Outrage.
Could we call it World War 1.5? Okay, sorry. Didn't mean to piss you off.
Well, World 1.5, I mean, that's the speed that people listen to the show.
I wonder how those bombs sound at 2x speed. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, that's exactly what they sound like. So right there, he's telling us that this is a version of World War 1. The last great war, the last war. I mean, this is unbelievable. It's giving it away. Okay, let's go to clip two, sorry.
The U.S.'s defense industrial base is not fully prepared to conduct an industrial-style war or to deter that kind of war.
Seth Jones directs the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and recently wrote a report about a shortage of materiel, empty bins in a wartime environment.
The U.S. has had operational plans for major war, but I think what hasn't happened is to tie those plans directly to acquisitions needs right now.
Already, the U.S. has sent from its stockpiles more than $32 billion worth of weapons, including more than 1,155 millimeter shells, 1,600 shoulder-fired Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, 8,500 Javelin anti-tank weapons, 1,800 Phoenix ghost drones, and 38 high-mobility artillery rocket systems.
What the U.S. has been able to do is use a range of its stockpiles of weapons. The challenge, though, is that a number of those stockpiles are now decreasing and the production lines aren't rising to levels that we need them for future contingencies.
It's not only about Ukraine. The military always plans for contingencies, including a war in the Pacific with China.
What was that thing that just lit off there? That sounded like a SpaceX rocket.
High Mars, probably. So, we've given them 1,000,000 shells, and they're telling us it's not enough. We need five times more. They've shot 1,000,000 shells? Where? To what? 1,000,000 shells.
Yes, 1,000,000. 1,000,000, I tell you. Why not?
Okay, let's go to clip three.
And now the Defense Department is spending billions to increase production, including modernizing the Scranton plant, as seen in these before and after photos. Already, production has increased nearly 50%. Overall, the Army hopes to increase artillery production 500% in the next 2 years, the largest production expansion since the Korean War. Bill LaPlante is the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment. I spoke to him on Wednesday and began by asking him whether the West could meet Ukraine's needs for artillery.
we'll do our best, and we have been doing our best to meet the demand as it comes in. And of course, the devil's in the details as to which caliber. But yes, as the piece showed, the 155 millimeter, we have already funded the factory at significant amounts to get that production rate ultimately up at 5 times that amount, which is almost unprecedented. And it's not just producing, but what we're also buying and getting from around the world in different stocks to supply what the Ukrainians need. Every day, we try to move something to the left, whether it's finding equipment in another country we can ship in, or anything we can do to find stocks.
As we just saw, Ukrainian soldiers just a few weeks ago outside of Bakhmut told me they didn't have enough. That was an artillery piece, an older artillery piece, Soviet era. I was with another mortar unit. They said they didn't have enough mortars, also firing Soviet era mortars. This isn't only about American, European weapons, is it? It's also about getting Ukraine older weapons, which many of their units still use, right?
That's exactly right. It's a constant challenge of, do we find or produce the old Soviet or Russian equipment, or do we give them the new equipment? And that's, we go through that every day.
You know, it kind of reminds me, in the Netherlands, as you know, on December 31st, you can go pick up your pre-purchased fireworks and you can legally set, well, they changed the rules a bit this year, but you can legally set it off for New Year's Eve. And it's like, you know, we'd go and we'd have our parents, you know, vouch for us or whatever. We get our big bag and but of course we'd have that a week in advance and we'd be shooting stuff off. And then it's just like, then it's just on the 31st all day long, just as much as you can, just throw more. They're just blowing stuff up, but it's doing nothing. It's just blowing. Are they just blowing up our stockpiles?
That's what it looks like.
So what happens if China wants to fight us? We got nothing.
Gonna crank it up.
Yeah, well, then we'll crank it up. You know, this makes no sense.
Well, they make the point that the Korean War, we cranked it up. And so I looked at the military budget for the Korean War. And during that era, the military budget for the United States, during that, when we had it cranked up because of the Korean War, the military budget was $44.9 billion, which is less, you know, less as a spit in the bucket. But let's balance it for inflation and
make it 400,000, make it 400 million. Yeah, that's still half of our current budget.
Yeah, less than half.
But that budget,
and that's when we were cranking it up.
But that budget is not going into ammunition. I look at the email every day. I saw another one. $3 billion to Hawaii to build a dry dock. Okay, I'm sure we need it. You know, it's just being spent on junk. Not ammo.
All right, let's go to clip 4.
But on air defense specifically, I've been told they're running out of S-300 of parts, weapons all over the world, and so therefore they have to go to Western.
I think for air defenses and frankly for ground forces, what you're seeing is having to go from the old Soviet systems to almost certainly Western systems for the reasons you said.
And this is all, of course, before we get to Ukraine's spring offensive. You are trying to figure out how to get all these armored vehicles and their parts into Ukraine. How do you know that they'll have enough of those munitions, those parts, those modern weapons, to be able to launch some kind of counteroffensive in the coming weeks?
What we're doing is working with the Germans, the Poles, and the other countries, when we have a shortfall in parts, say for a certain version of Leopards, to scour and find those parts, even to the extent we can find advanced manufacturing, 3D print. So we're working on each one, and the idea is to make sure that there are enough parts to sustain for each model.
Why not give Ukraine the longer range weapon known as the ATACMS, which would fly 180 miles that it's been requesting, that so far the administration has refused?
Yeah, it's been a policy decision to date that the long range weapons, which we have been providing, which is about an 80 kilometer precision guided weapon, is sufficient in range for the targets that they have. I think for when you get into types of capabilities that are well beyond it, you get into policy issues and sustainment issues of whether or not it's an escalatory thing.
If I could, though, intelligence officials tell me that specifically the capacity of the ATACMS and the range of the ATACMS is a red line for the Kremlin in terms of what Ukraine would be able to hit if it were to use that weapon in Russia. But why is that a concern, given that Ukraine has promised not to use American weapons inside Russia?
Like, we're not. Oh, no, don't worry.
We promise not to use it.
We're not going to send anything to Moscow. Woo! Look at that one go!
So
and we should trust Yeah, we should trust them when they say that. We should just trust them.
Oh, yeah, they promise. They promise.
We'll just trust them.
Because they've never been known for their dishonesty.
Ever. Ever. It's Ukraine. You can trust Ukraine. That's not corrupt.
So it sounds like that they're still using Soviet gear that we have to supply parts for.
Yeah.
And we have to scrounge the parts from all over the place. Yeah. And we even have to, for the Soviet gear, we have to 3D print some of these things, which probably don't have templates necessarily, but I'm sure there's enough engineers around they can 3D print some of these parts, which is the future. And it's just a fiasco at this point. But right. At least there's some kind of light at the end of the tunnel, maybe. But you have to listen to this clip, and you can kind of tell that what the Ukrainians are thinking is not necessarily what we're thinking, and how this thing comes to an end, which you think is going to be sooner than later. And I'm not going to disagree with that, but I'm not totally convinced. But there is a little guy, there's a funny little gag at the end of this guy, this assistant defense guy. So here we go.
Well, I think it's one of the concerns. I think there's multiple concerns. And the other piece of it is to what extent it will make a big difference in the battle. And those are all part of the calculation.
To what end are you trying to procure weapons for Ukraine to re-seize all of its territory that it has lost since 2014?
We're providing everything we can that we believe they need. And I would say this, we are going to be there with them until it's over and as long as we need to. And not for the least of which is, if we think it's expensive now, if Putin prevails, it'll be really expensive. And so this is really that important. And we're going to provide the equipment they need.
Ukraine argues it won't be over until it re-seizes Crimea.
That may be their view.
That may be their view.
Play the end again and don't step on it because he giggles.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't hear the giggle. I'm sorry.
But they need.
Ukraine argues it won't be over until it re-seizes Crimea.
That may be their view.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Well, already Zelensky was denied appearing in the Oscar ceremony tonight.
Yes, good for them.
Well, here's what I like about the story. He has an agent. William Morse Entertainment made a plea to the Academy to spotlight Zelensky. He has an agent.
We can't even get a William Morris agent.
I mean, Mike Simpson. Hey, Mike Simpson, William Morris Entertainment agent. What? Yeah, thank you. We should be able to get you as an agent for John's bit part. At minimum.
Yeah, even that. Yeah, at there
minimum,
you go.
At minimum.
Big money.
At minimum.
Unbelievable that this guy has the gall. I'm using an agent. I think it's funny, but the gall it takes. Hey, we have our own. We're doing something here. Hey, you know, it's like, what do you want to get involved with? It's an award show.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, my feeling is it'll be all Silicon Valley jokes tonight about Silicon Valley Bank jokes.
I will bet you a dollar.
Okay. Well, we're getting a lot of dollars here. Okay. $1. You say.
You haven't gotten one yet.
Okay. $1.
$1, then this will be easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
That will, if there is any jokes, there'll be less than five total.
No, 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 no. What do you mean? So you're pegging it at five? I have to have five jokes about that to win $1?
Well, everything's going to be about Silicon Valley jokes. Well, blah, blah. What do you mean? So one joke is counts?
Let's say three. Okay, I'll take your five. I'm not afraid.
You're going to take the five.
I'm going to take the five.
I was just about to give in to the three.
No,
you dropped the ball.
No, I'm going to take the five, but I'll have to write you a check for my Silicon Valley Bank account. Hey, Bloomberg came up with an interesting little ditty the other day. EU has no clue of whereabouts of 86% of frozen Russian bank central bank assets. You know, there's the $300 billion that was supposedly frozen.
Oh, they're scattered?
They can't find it. They couldn't find more than $36.4 billion. And then you have Medvedev. He said, oh, may I point out, they have $300 billion worth of foreign assets frozen in Russia.
So that's a wash.
It's a quid pro quo. Or a wash, yeah. It cancels each other out. He says, it is a happy coincidence. It would be enough to recompense Russia for what might be stolen from Russia. Well, that's kind of interesting. I didn't. No one broadcast that.
No, heaven forbid.
Anyway, we're still using evil Putin and Russia to try and capture the rest of the countries in the EU sphere to try and get them into NATO and try and get them into the war. You see what's going on in Georgia. Moldova, though, is the interesting one. As you know, QQ, one of our producers, he's from Moldova. And he says, you know, that the president of the woman, who I think she's president or prime minister.
No, isn't it that guy?
Moldova. No, Moldova is a woman, I think.
What am I thinking? Oh, I'm thinking of Belarus.
Yeah, no, Moldova is a woman. But she's all in on EU. But the Moldovans may not be all in on EU and NATO. And here's Kirby reacting to a question from a White House correspondent who I've never seen ask a question before. And she looks Israeli in a way, but, you know, I'm not sure where she's from.
Recently has said that there was a Russian plot to sort of overthrow her government and break Moldova's path to Europe. It was something that President Zelensky himself had also warned about.
Yeah.
What is the U.S.'s assessment of this possible plot? And more broadly, what is the concern about Russia's attempts to sort of influence these pro-European governments in the region, even though it's right now focused on Ukraine, about other countries in the region?
So what I'll say about that is deeply concerning reports, certainly not outside the bounds of Russian behavior. And we absolutely stand with the Moldovan government and the Moldovan people.
But you have no confirmation from the U.S. side of intel?
I know of no independent confirmation, but we're certainly not questioning the capacity, the will of the Russians and Mr. Putin to try to do that. It's perfectly right up Page Ivers' playbook.
Oh, Page Ivers' playbook. Yeah, he's gonna, you know, everyone's talking about, oh, he's going to take over Moldova. I don't think Kirby was ready for this question. Because, you know, they're so focused on Georgia trying to make it look like Russia. And, of course, there's a government in there that wants nothing to do with the West. They don't want to be part of NATO or whatever. They're sick and tired of all this crap. Let me see Moldova. Let me just take a look at the map. I've got to refresh my memory. Yeah, Moldova's in such a great spot.
Well, Moldova, if I'm not mistaken, has that little strip of land that's butted up against Ukraine that is
correct.
Considered Russian.
Yes, it's on the southwestern flank, I think.
Yeah, something like that. But it's right there. And it's like a buffer between the Ukraine and the main part of Moldova. And the Russians have been wanting to capture that, and they can't seem to manage
it. It's right near Odessa, and it borders on Romania.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk right now that the Russians are really angling to get Odessa. I think that's a lost cause at this point.
I don't think they care. I think they want Donbass. They want to, that's what they want. That's the historical.
Well, if you look
part.
At the some of the takeover maps where they take over a big chunk of Ukraine, Odessa is included. They'd love to own all of the ports because there's money there. But okay. Odessa cannot go to the Russians and probably never will. But it's been discussed.
So any, that could be for 5 years from now when this thing cranks up again, they could go get that. But I don't know. I'm just not seeing much movement. The Moldova thing is weird. It's weird. You know, does that mean that we need, we can't send anything anymore. We have no ammo. We got nothing. I don't know what the plan is. They may be at a stalemate. And that little laugh tell you had there, that little giggle, like, oh, yeah, that's what they think. It looks like it's ending.
That's a giveaway. He says, well, that's what, and it's not answering the question either. It's like saying, you know, do you think that the Ukrainians want to take back Crimea? And he says, yeah, I've heard that's what they think. Mm. Kind of, I don't, yeah. It's like, I don't think so. That's not part of it. We'll be here forever if that happens.
Yeah. Goodness. I wish we knew a little bit more.
what they're doing. I wish they'd stop it.
What, stop the war?
Yeah.
Well,
they have the wherewithal. They have, supposedly, we have diplomats that are professionals. And meanwhile, of course, we lost, you know, the war between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which is mostly a Pyrrhic, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. But they had a proxy war going on in Yemen between the two. And it was brokered to peace by the Chinese.
This was beautiful. I have a clip.
Reconciliation between old enemies.
A declaration signed by our kingdom, Iran and China.
This announcement on national television in Saudi Arabia followed the release of a joint statement with Iran that the two Middle Eastern countries brought together around a table in China had re-established diplomatic relations.
We agreed to open a new chapter between the Islamic Republic of Iran and Saudi Arabia after having no ties for 7 years while observing the interests of both countries.
This video released by Iranian state media shows Iranian and Saudi officials alongside China's most senior diplomats. Sunni Saudi Arabia cut ties with predominantly Shia Iran in 2016 after an attack on its embassy in Tehran carried out by Iranian protesters after the Saudi execution of a Shia cleric. Re-establishing ties could have wide implications across the Middle East, particularly in Yemen, where the two rival Gulf powers are locked in a proxy war, as well as in Iraq and in Lebanon. Riyadh and Tehran will reopen their embassies and will also restart economic and security deals signed in 1998 and 2001. The White House welcomed the rapprochement, saying it supports any interest to de-escalate tensions in the region. Brokers Beijing, meanwhile, praised the wisdom of the two countries.
I think this is a baller move by China. Really cool they did this. Because now they've got Saudi Arabia, Iran, Russia. They got a pretty formidable front now. In the front, they got a formidable group. And what does that do for our sales of weapons and training and advisors to Yemen? Does that end? Is that over now? Is there?
Well, we were selling to Saudi Arabia, and they were using it in Yemen.
Yeah, believe me, we have advisors helping them out in Yemen.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think it puts the kibosh on it. It doesn't change the fact that the Saudis will probably still keep buying our F-16s
China is
or F-35s. I'm not sure what we're selling them.
China is going to negotiate the peace between Russia and Ukraine. This is the way
that
out.
That was the thesis that showed up in the show about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they did this little side bit, which is like, okay, look, here's how it works. We're going to show you how good we are. And then they negotiate. Let me pick two crappy countries that hate each other. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Let me show you how we get these two to get together.
Yeah.
And they got them together out of the blue, by the way. I didn't know about this happening.
No,
we weren't given any heads up on this by the media. That's for sure.
No, there was no precursor at all.
And so, boom, this happens. Okay, now we can deal with the rest of it. We can hook these two guys. We can get the Ukraine thing. It's an embarrassment. No. Oh yeah, we praise a bull crap. Our people should be ashamed of themselves.
Oh, they're not. They're completely oblivious. They have a board for a court.
I don't believe it.
Okay. So
they can't be. How can you be humiliated like this?
Oh, they're
and then say, well, that's great.
Oh, they're humiliated, but they want to save face. And China is going to let them save face. They're the kings of saving face. And everything I talked about, the pivot to China. I'm going to give you two examples right now. The first one is Avril Haines. She represents the U.S. I think it's the National Intelligence Director.
She is the dumbest woman I've ever seen in the intelligence community.
Well, she's running it, and this report, sadly, cut it down 48 seconds, has some music under it, but this is from testimony in Senate.
In brief, the CCP represents both the leading and most consequential threat to U.S. national security and leadership globally, and its intelligence-specific ambitions and capabilities make it, for us, our most serious and consequential intelligence rival. During the past year, the threat has been additionally complicated by a deepening collaboration with Russia, which also remains an area, obviously, obvious, of intense focus for the intelligence community. We do see them providing assistance to Russia in the context of the conflict, and we see them in a situation in which they become increasingly uncomfortable about the level of assistance and not looking to do it as publicly as might otherwise occur, and given the reputational costs associated with it.
Yeah, sure. They don't care about their reputation. So just bear with me for a second. It behooves everybody for China to end the Ukraine conflict, because we are already moving away from Ukraine. You're not on the Oscars. Your agent, fire your agent, get a new one. It's not going to work. We're not going to let you on the Oscars. That happened. That right there, I know it's over. In America, if you're shunned from show business, it's the end of your career. And he's an actor, comedian. So we have the intelligence community. Oh yes, oh this is boy. They're very sophisticated. They got balloons. So we need some money for our intelligence. Okay, great. So we got the dumb Avril Lavigne over there. I have here in front of me a memorandum.
It was not Avril Lavigne.
No, I know.
Rachel Lavigne.
No. Avril Lavigne is a singer. Why are you gonna be so complicated?
Oh, right. You're right. Yeah, sorry.
who is, I believe, Rachel Lavigne's daughter? Yeah, so that's very possible. I don't know. I have in front of me a memorandum for all Department of Defense personnel dated stamped March 2nd, 2023 from our Secretary of Defense. You know him. If you wouldn't recognize him because he has a mask and a shield on. I'd like to read a little bit from this memorandum. Since day one as Secretary of Defense, I have been guided by three priorities: defending the nation, taking care of our people, and succeeding through teamwork. Wow, what is he running? A Silicon Valley startup? What an idiot. Over the past 2 years, we've made tremendous progress in all three arenas. I'd like to thank each and every one of you for your commitment and hard work. As we look to the year ahead, these same three priorities continue to guide all that we do. So he's prioritized these challenges. I'm going to give them to you in order of appearance. And order of priority. Number one.
And this is the order of priority.
The order of priority.
So number one is the most high priority.
Highest priority. Exactly. Yeah. Defend the nation. Prioritize China as the pacing challenge. An increasingly aggressive China is trying to shape the international rules-based system, New World Order, to suit its authoritarian preferences. This is a generational challenge, and the department will rise to meet it. To do so, we must embrace integrated deterrence, which charges us to coordinate our efforts across all warfighting domains, theaters, and the spectrum of conflict to create new and more complex dilemmas for our adversaries. More money.
Adversaries.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Adversaries, thank you. We must continue to break down stovepipes across the department. Stovepipes across the department. Improve our cooperation with the interagency and Congress, and work with our allies and partners to improve operational planning. Blah, blah, blah. So, we are to strengthen our deterrence posture in the Indo-Pacific by developing new concepts and capabilities. Ka-ching. Deepening our alliances and partnerships. Hello, Philippines. Expanding our activities and operations, hello, right off the coast of China. As the threat from PRC evolves, we will provide Taiwan self-defense capabilities consistent with the budget we need. I'm sorry, with the Taiwan Relations Act. All right. Two, tackle the acute Russian threat. We will not be drawn into Putin's war of choice, but we remain resolved to defend every inch of NATO territory. Working closely with our allies, we've already strengthened NATO's eastern flank, and we'll continue to strengthen our collective defense and deterrence. It's over. Address advanced and persistent threats. The department will also remain vigilant against dangers, including North Korea, Iran, and the global terrorist organizations. Innovate and modernize. Here we go. America's dynamism has always been at the heart of our strategic advantage. To tackle emerging challenges, we are modernizing every aspect of the joint force, from hypersonic weapons to our joint warfighting concept. Our joint warfighting concept? Are they making concept vehicles? From data analysis to artificial intelligence. Ooh, ChatGPT war version. We are also accelerating the development of advanced technologies to deliver new capabilities to the force. This sounds like a Silicon Valley pitch. And then, of course, on the list, meet the climate crisis.
Well, this is not number one.
No, this is number four. I'm giving them to you in order.
Number four, you've already given me about 10 of them.
No, I gave you one. One was China. Two was Russia. Three, persistent threats. Oh, yeah. Four is innovate and modernize. And five, I'm sorry, is meet the climate crisis. Our strategy and planning addresses the security implications of our changing climate. We are developing new platforms to mitigate logistical risks in contested environments.
Whatever happened to the fish that are on the streets of Miami?
Flopping on the streets of Miami.
Where's the fish?
Let me see. That was... what is this? There they are. They're flopping.
People are noticing the largest downpour in the history of the UK was just a year ago last fall. And there have been wave after wave of these downpours. The sea level predictions in low-lying coastal areas, not least on the banks of the Thames, are ones that people are now taking into account.
Oh, the Thames is overflowing.
I was in Amsterdam earlier this week. And believe me, they're looking very carefully at this. In making this movie, I went to Miami Beach. I saw fish from the ocean swimming in the streets of Miami Beach.
Flopping around.
During the highest of the high tides. That's happening on a regular basis.
Every day. Regular basis.
How about some photos of the more recent examples?
So the second part was taking care of our people. I'll just run through this quickly. Grow our talent. What does that mean? To remain the strongest fighting force in the world, we must recruit and retain the best of America. Yeah, why don't you jack us up with vaccines we don't want? That helps. That grows your talent. Build resilience and readiness. Whatever. Ensure accountable leadership. You're right. And then succeeding through teamwork. Join forces with our allies and partners. Sell them some crap they don't want. Strengthen partnerships across America. And build unity within the department. So, there is really nothing about the Ukraine war. It's not the existential threat that it was. There's no whatever it takes. We're going to defend NATO. It's all about China. So China gives us, it's a gimme. It's like, it's almost like, hey, this is great. Thanks, China. And now we got Iran to say, oh, we're very worried about Iran because they're working with China. We've got Taiwan. Oh, we're very worried. They're going to take, and you know what? China will probably just not do anything until 2027. It's just going to, and we're just going to build up.
They might not do anything. The latest from Burns, who had the 2027 predictions, now he's now backing off saying, you know, what you just said. Yeah, you know, they might not do anything.
Yeah, why would they?
Why would they? And just watch us flailing around like idiots.
If we were smart, we just continue to build up our financial resilience. Because, you know, ultimately, China's trying to put together, a financial group. You know, BRICS is basically that, but a financial group. And make their money, and someone's got to be the reserve currency of green energy, I guess. It's not supposed to be oil or gas or anything. So I just see this as a non-starter, which it's going to be fear-mongering on the news every single day. All across the Western world, be afraid, China, 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 and, you know, and maybe there'll be little things they do here and there. But I don't see it. I think it's great. They want more money. They don't care. They just want to blow stuff up and on TV, pitch for more money. We have no one to actually go and fight anymore. We have like 50,000 ready troops. We don't even have the 500,000 that we're supposed to have. It's really bad. Let's see. Over the past week, we had Queen Ursula came over to visit. Queen Ursula, the president of the European Union Commission. I think it's the Commission. So after Schultz came over, and Schultz, of course, like, hey, man, you know, we got to like step out of this Ukraine thing. Let's blame it on the Ukrainians so we have an out. Queen Ursula comes in because now it's time to go back to the green deal, the hydrogen, clean hydrogen.
Yeah, so she flies over the same way that
In and out, Schultz, baby. In and out, yeah.
Comes out, over, flies over. I mean, again, because they don't trust any other form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
But okay.
Well, she did do she gave a speech, addressed the media. And if you recall, the big problem with the European Union and the U.S. is the Inflation Reduction Act, where we said we made this, you know, a lot of money. Was it $1.5 trillion? I think it was.
Yeah.
How's that working out, by the way? Has inflation tempered any? Is it any better?
No, it keeps going up.
Oh, crazy. And all kinds of subsidies. $1.5 trillion, a lot of money that we put up for green initiatives. Except in there, it's like, well, you know, we'll give subsidies for electric vehicles and hydrogen stuff, but it has to be 60% U.S. made. And somehow that was a fast one that was pulled, because this is what Queen Ursula has been bitching about for months now. We've played several clips. And I guess they struck some sort of deal.
We agreed on a transparency dialogue concerning the incentives.
What's a transparency dialogue? Is that like a podcast? I think it's a podcast. Transparency dialogue. That's what it is.
We agreed on a transparency dialogue concerning the incentives that are given to the clean tech industry. For us, it's important on both sides of the...
I like this. We kind of overlooked this, but... It used to be green tech. You remember that was Kleiner Perkins, who put together a whole bunch of investments in companies for green tech. Now it's clean tech. And clean tech is hydrogen, as far as I can tell.
Clean tech industry. For us, it's important on both sides of the Atlantic to know what kind of incentives are being given to the clean tech industry, to make sure that we join forces to boost the clean tech industry that is crucial and paramount for reaching a circular economy, a net zero economy. A few weeks ago, we had already an agreement concerning electric vehicles, accessing the American market. Today, we agreed that we will work on critical raw materials that have been
sourced
or processed in the European Union, and to give them the access to the American market as if they were sourced in the American market. We will work on an agreement where that is concerned.
There you go. So it's for the raw materials that we're going to dig up parts of Europe, which I think actually will be Canada. So it's like a pass through. Because Ursula went to Canada and said, hey, you know, we need your raw materials. We need your green stuff because you have a lot of gas. And then you ship that to us, and then we'll probably ship it off to America. They're doing some kind of deal so that they dig up other countries.
Yeah, dig up Canada.
That's a good
Alberta title. Is just ripe to be dug up.
Dig up Canada.
Dig up Canada.
Meanwhile, we have nothing to worry about because our national laboratory in the U.S. has cracked the battery technology code. We'll be able to go thousands of miles on one charge. It'll charge in 5 minutes.
Oh,
it's all.
I didn't see this.
Oh, goodness. The coming EV batteries will sweep away fossil fuel transport with or without net zero. I wish I had a clip. I'll just read the first paragraph. The Argonne National Laboratory in the U.S. has essentially cracked the battery technology for electric vehicles, discovering a way to raise the future driving range of standard EVs to 1,000 miles or more. It promises to do so cheaply without exhausting the global supply of critical minerals in the process. Why? It's almost like zero point energy. I have seen these stories so many times. Oh, how many times have we seen a new battery technology?
Here, we have to remember
that
all battery technology, except for little bitty things like the membrane and some of the packaging and all the rest of it, all battery technology was beaten to death in the 1800s.
Yeah, we had battery cars in the 1800s, and then once the gasoline-powered engine came along, everyone went, screw that battery piece of crap. We've been through this. It's the Argonne IIF battery. It's a global breakthrough.
Well, I'm skeptical.
I'm very skeptical. Because we've heard this.
There's nothing new in battery technology.
2005, I have a report here. 2005, New Scientist. A rechargeable battery that can be fully charged in 6 minutes lasts 10 times as long as today's rechargeables and can provide bursts of electricity up to 3 times more powerful in a Nevada lab. Oh, 2011. A pioneer in batteries research who already successfully launched a $350 million company to supply batteries to the likes of GE and Chrysler has done it again. Only this time, it represents the complete reinvention of battery technology as we know it. It will fully replace fossil fuels, especially oil. So we've seen this.
And you could probably, that was 2011. Yeah. You could probably go back another 10 years and you'll find something else.
This is my setup for your battery for car. I have no idea what your clips are, but I figured I'd set you up.
If you have no idea. Okay, this is just a back. Okay, yeah, I got the battery clips.
I see batteries for cars. I'm like, this. I got to set them up. This is perfect.
Yeah.
Play the clip?
Play clip one. Let's go with batteries.
Do I want to go electric or hybrid? The Biden administration would like you to. The administration wants at least half of new car sales to be electric in 10 years. To make that happen, car manufacturers need batteries, lots of them. But here's the thing. China has a tight grip on the materials and production needed to make those batteries.
What?
According to the International Energy Agency, China made 75% of the world's lithium-ion batteries in 2021. The U.S. made only 7%. This is yet another area where the U.S. and China are competing on the global stage. So we thought this would be a good time to ask how the U.S. can make progress on electric cars and renewable energy when China dominates the market. We called Amos Hochstein for that. He's the Special Presidential Coordinator for Global Infrastructure and Energy Security. In that role, he advises President Biden on energy as a national security matter, and his portfolio runs across agencies, so we thought he'd be a good person to talk about this, and he's with us now. Mr. Hochstein, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Michelle.
Oh,
really great to have this conversation.
Well, thanks for that. So to start us off, is the U.S. in a race with China to acquire the materials for these car batteries?
I think we're in a race. Not necessarily with China, but we're in a race to ensure that we have for the United States a diversified sourcing of these batteries and solar. So it's not just about the battery. So if you think about it, the way you just presented it, Michelle, we have the battery in it has a number of components and the car has even more components. And they all come from places like sub-Saharan Africa, from South and Central America, Southeast Asia. And we have to source those. So one thing President Biden wants to do is make more of those batteries here at home. We want to do more mining here at home, but we know we can't mine in the United States for everything that we need.
No, we won't have it. Go dig up Canada. Much better idea.
Well, there's some mines, and I think the Carolinas have some lithium mines, and Nevada is another place. Of course, Nevada.
Yeah.
These numbers were, I didn't know this. I didn't know that China made 75% of all the batteries and we made 7%. When did that happen?
I don't know.
What happened?
By the way, wasn't I read something about lithium? Like stocks for lithium are way down for some reason? I read something somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I looked into it.
Okay.
But I couldn't figure out. It's just who knows what's going on with lithium. But we have two facilities in the United States, two lithium companies, and there's a bunch of, Canada has a couple of lithium plays that run on one of those, I don't even know if it's existing anymore, but they used to have a stock exchange on the west coast of Canada that was just did mining stocks. I think it was called a mining stock exchange. It used to be penny stocks. And you can invest in some of these penny lithium stocks. I think it might not be a bad idea. But anyway,
we don't offer financial advice. Disclaimer.
Yeah, I agree. Don't listen to us ever.
Ever. Ever. Buy Bitcoin. Don't listen to me. Just saying.
Don't listen to him especially.
No. Okay. Protect yourself from the banking collapse.
There you go.
All right, part two.
We don't want China to control the supply for the whole world, just like we didn't want Russia to control the supply of energy for its neighbors. So we have to learn from the mistakes of the Russia war and now implement that here and make sure that when you
learn from our mistakes from the Russia war?
The Russian war, yeah.
What Russian war?
You know.
The one in Ukraine?
Yeah.
What does it have to do with lithium?
You tell me.
Oh, man, good.
So we have to learn from the mistakes of the Russia war and now implement that here and make sure that when you buy that electric vehicle or you install that solar panel, that it's not controlled by one country.
So
you mean China, which controls 100% of the solar panels?
This guy is great.
Not controlled by one country.
So a fact sheet released by the White House last month said, quote, the U.S. is increasingly dependent on foreign sources for many of the processed versions of these minerals. Globally, China controls most of the market for processing and refining for cobalt, lithium, rare earths, and other critical minerals, end quote. As I said, this is from the White House.
Yeah.
How did we get to this point where China essentially has control over this market and the U.S. is playing catch up?
Over the last 10 years, China has invested in acquiring mines in primarily Africa and some in South America. So they own a lot of mining. They own a lot of the refining and processing of those materials. So when they come out of the ground, you got to turn them into battery grade material. And then they want to build the batteries. And we wanted things cheap. So we were willing to buy whatever was on the market at the lowest cost. China then reduced the cost, subsidizing it. We bought the cheap stuff from them. And our own industries went out of business.
So what happened to Elon's gigafactory? I thought he had all the answers.
Well, for him.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but China controls him. I mean, aren't they the biggest?
Well, he's got a plant there, and they always threaten him with one thing or another if he doesn't shut up about something.
Shut up. Iran, shut up. Shut up, Iran. We chop you in half. Your money, your Tesla. That was my Xi Jinping impersonation.
Yeah, very good.
Yes,
very
good.
I'm
interested in why this happened.
The why, it's not as much as the constituency, but maybe even to the contrary. What the Chinese wanted to do was to take away our industry. We even sued them under the Obama administration and accused them of anti-dumping, meaning that they were selling product for less than what it was costing them to produce. And so, because we didn't think ahead of what is this doing to our industry, they essentially took us out of business. And we didn't really care because we think about things in a free market. We always talk about we want this to be in a free market. And one actor in this free market was acting exactly the opposite. They were subsidizing and pouring money into it and using their influence around the world to take over the supply chain. And once we lost the supply chain, we lost the industry. So if in 2010, we were the dominant solar power manufacturer, today we barely even exist. But that's all about to change.
It's all about to change as we dig up Canada.
Well, he never goes into how it's about to change.
Well, the big change they're pushing for is hydrogen. And the New York Times had a pretty big article about Australia. That Australia will be the world's biggest hydrogen producing nation because they're going to put probably Chinese solar panels all over the outback.
Yeah.
This is great.
We always forget. We always forget Michael Moore's documentary. The last one that was famous that he did, which was still available. You got to scrounge it up someplace. About the environmental movement.
Yeah, it was all about nuclear being the best thing.
Well, that's what it turned out to be. But he kept showing example after example of failed experiments for green energy, including that giant solar panel that was set up down in the Arizona desert.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Huge. This would be similar to what's going to happen with the outback. This huge, it was a big giant lash up that you went to visit it. It was just in shatters. It was in tatters. It was a mess.
Well, the outback certainly is big. You can put a lot of solar
but you know, how many panels
there.
Can you get? Who's going to monitor it? You know, okay. Yeah. And they're all Chinese. The Chinese are going to, you know, sell a lot of panels.
Yeah.
But I'm always thinking about this, you know, there's some economic thinking where if, you know, if somebody's going to throw money away and they're going to sell you a solar panel for $10 and $10 of it is their subsidy and you're actually getting the solar panel, you're paying $10, but you're actually getting $20 for the solar panel.
Right.
That this is a benefit. It's a net gain in wealth to the receiver. And the Chinese have done this in their entire history. And they always make a fundamental error at the end. They'd never corner the market correctly. This happened with Chinese and the Japanese silk industry. The Japanese developed the silk industry, and they were making these fine silks. They had the worms and all the rest. And somehow, I guess the 1400s, it was a long time ago. And the Chinese smuggled some of the silkworms out because they didn't know about this and started making silk. And it took a while, but you can make a lot of bugs. And so they started making silk, and they started making silk that was good enough to compete with the Japanese stuff. And they lowball them. They would sell it for one-tenth the price.
Best
and it was
price.
Almost as good.
Best price.
And this continued and continued until it put the Japanese silk people out of business.
Are they coming to get you? What is that? What is the siren?
Like all hell's breaking loose around here.
Yeah, what's going on? That's right near. That's closer than normal.
I don't know where they are.
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
no, I like the silk story. Keep going.
So they put the silk guys in Japan out of business. Basically, took over the world silk market, and that became, you know, silk trading was a big deal during the Silk Road.
Silk Road was called
that for a reason, because people were trading everything they could get this Chinese silk. They never jacked up the prices.
What an idiot.
No, it was best price. We got the best price. We took over the market. Why should we jack up the prices? And that's always kind of been their attitude. It's like, we got a product that's making money. Well, it's not like us. We always think of everything in terms of what we do.
Right.
You corner the market, you know, do bunker hunt, cornering the silver market. Let's just jack it up. No.
Mr. D.C. Borat, open up the door, Jim Dyer, now!
Seems like they're there at the door, John.
Yeah, I'll go down. I'll let him in.
Meanwhile, as we're on this green energy kick, which is just the stupidest thing, people just aren't having it. I love the Brits. You know, this ULEZ, the ultra-low emission zone, which is only a part of London right now, but they want to make it a lot of London, where, you know, you come into the ULEZ zone and you come in with the wrong vehicle and you get a bill. And so now the Brits are just cutting the wires, painting the lenses black, ripping them off, sawing them in half.
Good.
Yeah, of course it's good. You need this kind of vandalism. This is insane what this mayor is doing. Sadiq Khan. They're going to install 2,750 of these things by August. Yeah, people are not having it.
Pellet guns.
Pellet guns. See, what else do we have? Whoa.
Sorry.
I don't have anything else on the climate change. Do I have anything here? Oh, I do, actually. I'm sorry. Yes, I do have some climate change. This is the Netherlands. You know, there's a big vote coming up on the 15th. I think it's the provincial elections, and Geert Wilders is out, who's been under protection for maybe 15 years or so because, you know, there's a what's it called against him? Not the jihad, but a...
to get him?
Fatwa.
A fatwa.
Yeah. Oh, they've been out because he was anti-immigration. And he said, no, we're not built. We're not an immigration country. We're not built for... all of the Turks and the Moroccans.
A little dinky country like that is not built for a big input of all kinds of foreigners.
At all.
And so it doesn't make any sense.
And so this is about shutting down the 3,000 farms. The farmers are out protesting again. They went all the way down to Brussels. And, you know, we've studied this closely. This is one of the Tri-Cities project, where they want the Netherlands, as you called it, to be a bedroom community. And so, of course, Wilders is out with his security detail, and he answers a question about about the farmer eliminations.
What do you make of the nitrogen emission reducing policies? What do you think the real story is?
Well, I think it's leftish rubbish. The real aim here is to get rid of our farmers for some leftish nitrogen kind of agenda and to make room for even more non-Western immigrants, asylum seekers, and build houses and centers for them. And it's something that is totally different than the current elite telling the people.
I like leftish. I like that. Instead of leftist, I like leftish. I like it.
Leftish.
Leftish. It's a nice dish we make here at the restaurant. It's leftish. It's leftish overs. And of course, climate change is killing us left and right and making our travel very, very, very unpleasant.
In the past week, several airline passengers have been severely injured or killed when their flights experienced severe turbulence. On March 1st, 7 people were hospitalized and the plane cabin was left a mess when a Lufthansa flight encountered significant turbulence over Tennessee. A few days later, a woman flying on a business jet was killed when the aircraft was violently shaken and forced to divert to Connecticut. Scientists expect turbulence like this to become more frequent due to climate change.
Yep, there it is. Scientists expect to get... Y'all going to die in the sky! We're going to die in the sky, people!
I had a... I was on a plane once and I was sitting in first, traveling somewhere, and I was sitting next to a guy who traveled a lot. He was like a salesman. He was traveling probably 2/3 the month.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get into this, I think you've probably done this, get into these horror story exchanges.
Oh yeah. Well, I was on a flight one time.
Yeah. So we got into this turbulence discussion and I said to him, we flew over the worst turbulence I ever experienced. We were coming in over Ontario. And it turns out that we were told later, because it threw the plane everywhere. It just was a horrible experience. The wings were about to break off.
Yeah.
And somebody said,
sure they were.
Yeah. And so somebody said, oh, yeah, that they tested the B-1 bombers flies around. If you catch the, you know, if you get into the turbulence of that thing, you get
atmospheric river. Atmospheric river.
It throws you all over the place. So I'm telling the guy the story. He says, oh, really? And he says, you know, first of all, did all the overhead cabins pop open and throw luggage all over the place and hit you in the head? And I said, no. And he says, well, then you've never been in turbulence.
Right. By the way, the solution to turbulence is to slow down, believe it or not. And that lady she was on the plane with her husband on the private jet. I can tell you what most of the people who are injured from turbulence don't have their seat belts on.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Particularly
because if a plane drops 10 feet and you're sitting there, you go up 10 feet and hit your head on the ceiling.
And I'll tell you that I always have my seat belt on. Always. I mean, I'm a pilot. Pilots are not stupid. And the lady in the private jet, she did not have her seatbelt on, and she died from a laceration to the head. Who knows? She probably got thrown and hit her head on some fancy table.
She'd been flying all over the place.
Yes,
but most people in private jets don't use seatbelts.
I know. I remember Ray Lane, Kleiner Perkins. This was when he took me and Bloom and Marta on his Galaxy, which is a huge jet, really. No, a Challenger, a global Challenger, to fly from San Francisco, I guess it was, what I don't know what the airport, to L.A. for the launch of the Tesla, which was the Roadster at the time, which Elon did in, or really Sequoia Capital, Elon, did it in an airplane hangar. And first of all, it was wall-to-wall private jets, 5 of them from ex-PayPal guys. Just it was all, everyone came in their private jet, and this was a new jet that Ray had, and so I sat up front in the jump seat between the two pilots, because you know it's a short flight from San Francisco to LA. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna fly up front, so I didn't need to sit in the back drinking cognac. So as we're landing, new plane, somehow the pilot made an error and the nose wheel brake was locked. So, you know, you land on the main landing gear, and as the nose wheel came down, the minute that hit, you know, it was like, of course, they unlocked it very quickly, But Ray Lane was in the back sitting across from Ron and Marta, and he had literally said, this thing is so smooth, you don't even need your seatbelt. He went flying forward with his glass of whiskey, everything. It could have been a really, really bad situation because these people are arrogant. You get rich, you get stupid. Really unbelievable. And so this is the tip. This is the tip we're going to give you that is a valid tip. Always wear your seatbelt, even when, ding, seatbelt sign is off, everybody. Keep it on. Keep it on.
Yeah, unless you have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, and even then, wait until you're absolutely certain that there's not a little lick of turbulence. And be at least at 30,000 feet before you even consider that.
Well, that's our tip for the day. That's the kind of tip, kind of arrogant, elitist tip that you'd get on this show, which accounts for lousy donations in the next segment.
And with that, I'd like to say in the morning to you and thank you for your courage, the man who put the sea in Dig Up Canada. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to my friend on the other end, Mr. John C. DeVore.
Good morning to you, Mr. Ron Krios. In the morning, ships at sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
And we noticed what is happening, the trolls in the troll room, who we always say in the morning too, they let's count them right away. Let's get the troll count. Whoa. It's already down to 1455. No, what do we have? No,
how many? I don't think this is accurate.
No, hold on, what do I'm not getting a count. What's my count here? 2333. There you go, 2333. And I'm going to keep refreshing because people are so stupid. They leave during the donation segment, which, by the way, is going to be short today. But this is where the best content takes place. 2309, we already lost 27. Shame on them. Shame on them.
Just by mentioning that, out it goes.
2352, we're down. We're down. 2309, unbelievable. These people should be ashamed of themselves. They do not care about the people who support the program, because that's what this is. And you know what? The people who leave, they're not supporters.
No, they probably aren't, and they don't care about us discussing the art.
2287.
2287. Wow, they really bail fast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They bail like little bitches.
I'm out of here. It's a donation segment. All they're going to do is beg for money.
Beg for money. Yeah, that's something. Yeah, well, that's what we do. Anyway, for those trolls still remaining, we love you. Thank you for staying with us, keeping it going strong. In fact, turn up the volume. You will not regret it. What is this? Adam, I listened to the donation segment, but after the count, I can go have a life. Okay. And that is Noodle Man 33. I'll block him forever.
Noodle man.
Noodle man. Douche man is what you mean. All right. Thank you to the trolls. We do appreciate the trolls. They're very helpful, and they can be helpful during the donation segment as well. That's why we love having you here. You can go to trollroom.io. That's how you participate. You get a little chat box there. You can listen to the stream live. We do this twice a week, Thursdays and Sundays. And it's like having a live studio audience. You know, it's and sometimes we name check you. I mean, if you're Noodle Man 33, you know, and Doug gave, we give karma for that guy? Oh, man, it's unbelievable how mean people are. 2243. We've lost 150 right there.
All right, okay. Let's get to work.
All right, good idea. Of course, you can also download one of those brand new and modern podcast apps at podcastapps.com. And if you get Podverse or Podcast Addict, then it'll actually give you an alert when we go live with the show. You log in, boom, you're in the troll room. You've got the stream live. Even if you can't, if you miss it, it's your podcast app. You can listen to it and you will get notified within 90 seconds of publishing. You do not get that from Apple. You don't get it from Spotify, from Google, Amazon. That is part of podcasting 2.0. You can also follow us at noagendasocial.com. It's Adam at noagendasocial.com, John C. Dvorak at noagendasocial.com. We're all on the Mastodon tip. We've been doing that for 5 years. So we're established, and I don't think you can get any more slots on our server, but you're more than welcome to follow us from any Mastodon instance that hasn't blocked us.
There's a million of them.
There is more than a million. No, there's not quite a million, but there's a lot. It's quite a lot. And yes, indeed, we always like to thank our artist who brings us the artwork, which we choose from noagendaartgenerator.com. You can go there now if you're listening live and refresh. and you'll see what the artists are doing as we speak. You can also see one of the many, many choices we had for the previous episode, which was episode 1536. We titled that Killer Clown. And this art was loved by many. It came to us from Roger Roundy, second in a row. He's going for the hat trick. This was the turtle Mitch upside down with a little Chinese crown. Signifying Mitch McConnell. Do we have an update on the minority
turtle
leader
man?
On Mitch on the turtle?
No, I don't think so. We don't, not for this show. We don't.
Okay. Well, we hope he's okay. We don't know.
Yeah.
By the way, the exodus seems to have stopped. Our bitching stopped it. That's really cool. Thanks. If you're still here, trolls, we love you. We'll be giving away a car to one of you later today. Roger, thank you so much. Let me just take a look. Let's take a look at.
He had a very funny comment to make about this art in
No Agenda Social.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, that's what I needed to know. I needed to humiliate someone's appearance. Humiliate, and he went on and on about, you know, just everything bad about the art in terms of being negative imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, that's how you win, kind of thing.
Yeah. And you could have been a part of that conversation if you were following along on noagendasocial.com. Now, there were a number of pieces. Let's see, what did we see? We had some Schultz pieces, by the way. You said that lots of people know the Hogan's Hero, Hogan.
Hogan, that's where we got some of our early jingles based on Hogan.
I got exactly two, both of them over 40. So.
Okay, anybody who's under 40 that's familiar with Hogan's Heroes and Schultz saying, I see nothing, or anything like that, send an email to adam@curry.com saying, I'm in that boat. John's right. I would put a dollar on it, but I won't. I got the dollar running on the five jokes.
We also have a dollar running on something else, but I can't remember.
That's long term.
It's December, but I don't know what it was for. Anyway, let's take a look. We had some Schultz stuff. We had the pre-show mix cassette tape. No, that didn't work. We had doped gold. We had some just weird stuff. There wasn't anything real. Oh, yeah. I like the mastermind.
Roundy walked away with it.
He did. But I like the changes here, which was the Ukraine flag being peeled back to show to reveal the Chinese flag. I like that. Well, I like that one. I didn't like the cursive letters that were used instead of bold Curry Dvorak and changes here. And you said you didn't even see what it was. You couldn't even parse it.
Right. Once you mentioned it, I said, yeah, kind of. But no,
I like that one. Roundy actually had two. He had two different color backgrounds, and we went with the obvious, beautiful Chinese red.
Yeah, I'm guessing that he did the first one, and then he's thinking, well, what can I do to improve it? And because all the artists do that, if they think it's not quite 100% there, and then so when he put the red background, made it look like the Chinese flag. And then the stars around his head, yellow, made it look like this, even more like the Chinese flag, and that was a winner. I don't know if the other one would have won.
Hmm. Well, the one we looked at was Matthew Dropko, Tucker's Big Dud. We actually considered that for a second because it was higher up on the list.
Yeah.
Than the Roundy one.
I liked the Dropko piece right away.
Yeah, you did. But then are you hearing me okay? Because people are saying that the stream is stuttering. I don't know.
You sound good.
Okay, well, then we're fine. Then it's somewhere else. Some January 6th stuff. No, I think that's it. And then all the other stuff is new. I do love Tanta Neal, who keeps trying to get us to talk about, I guess she's she's into crocheting.
She must be.
And what the crochet community, believe it or not, there's a crochet community, quite a big one.
Yeah, there's a knitting community, there's a crochet, there's an embroidery community. They have meetings. They go. A lot of them are in sewing machine shops, and you go in. A bunch of women go in there, and they all get a machine to dick around with. And they learn how to do certain tricks.
So what they were trying to do, and what has been very disappointing to the crocheting community, see, this is the kind of content that people are missing out on, is if you want to have artificial intelligence create a crocheting, I guess, is it a pattern or what do the crocheters go off of?
A template.
Yeah. And so they would upload a picture of Curry Dvorak, and the crocheting template that came out was not really cool looking for us.
No, just a couple of balls.
Yeah, we look really stupid. It was no good. Yeah. It was no good. So I don't think we're ever going to choose anything. We're probably not even going to talk about the topic, except in the donation segment where all the good stuff happens. Time to Neil. Interesting, our stream is dead. I have no idea why people... I'm connected. I have no idea why people are having a problem. Mm. It's okay. We'll just have to deal with it. And you know what? That's what happens. When everyone leaves, all of a sudden, then the stream starts to stutter.
Yeah, it could be their fault.
It's their fault. Thanks, trolls. Good work. And thank you very much, Roger Roundy. Two in a row. The way it works here is if you get three in a row, you get a hat trick. And that comes with all kinds of prizes.
Yeah. That and $2 give you a cup of coffee.
This is a value for value program. That's why you don't hear. And we could be playing ads, by the way, with a million listeners per show. That's 1,000 CPMs. Let's say we read two spots, about $25. We could do $50,000 an episode.
Yeah, for about as long as until they found us out.
Yeah, until they figured out what we were talking about, and it would be over very quick. So we exist by the grace of the people who feel they've received value from this program. And let's be honest, you got a lot of value today. You don't have to worry. You know what's coming up. You'll be the smart person in the room Monday at school or at work. But, hey, I know what's going on with the Silicon Valley Bank thing. I know what's going on. We're moving to China. Don't worry. Don't be freaked out. Don't get so upset. You'll be the one that has that calm and that peace over you. Surely that is worth some value. And to some people, it is. And they return that in the form of time, talent, and treasure, which is all we request. Many people do lots of things for us. We have people who also help produce the program with clips and websites and other boots on the ground information. But of course, we also need some treasure in the time, talent, and treasure department. And Rob Wing is our top executive producer today. He's from Essex, from Epping. In Great Britain, $500. And he says, hey, John and Adam. And so he has a longest donation note, but since it's short and he's the top, I'm going to read it all. Hold on a second. Where's the... There we go. Hi, John and Adam. Rob Wing from Essex here. For those that don't know, Essex is in the UK. It's much like East London, but with lots of trees. Big fan of the show for ever since I heard Adam on JRE around 3 years ago. Rogan donation. I really appreciate all you guys do, and of course what the producers do. Before we go further, I have to admit this is my first donation, so obviously I need a dedouching. Obviously you need that.
You've been dedouched.
Nice to see things are unraveling with the lockdown files here in the UK. Apparently the Telegraph paper has enough content for the next 3 months. Oh, this is the WhatsApp chat files. So I'm looking forward to when they get to the vaccine efficacy. It's not getting a huge amount of coverage in the UK for reasons the listeners will understand, but the information is starting to get out there more and more. Even the BBC reported on it, and that's saying something. You'd think there would be more outrage, but either people aren't aware, or like my douchebag brother-in-law, Ronan, they simply don't want to know. But these are the same people that were happy to belittle me or lump me in with the flat earthers at the time for questioning the narrative or for not taking the vaccine, accepting the vaccine into my life. I'd appreciate a douchebag jingle for the in-law. Just done. Lastly, I want to thank my smoking hot wife, Lara, who appreciates you keeping my amygdala small. Love is lit, says Rob. Anyone wants a don't eat me, Bo Jiden? Okay. Oh, hold on a second. Don't eat me, Bo Jiden. Where is that Bo Jiden? Don't eat me. Is it Bo Jiden?
Don't eat me.
Yeah,
could
but
be Bo Jiden.
All I have is Hillary. This is very weird. Don't eat me, Bo Jiden.
Look at Bo Jiden.
Yeah, I'm looking at Bo Jiden. Oh, here we go. For some reason. Oh, apostrophe. Go figure.
Don't eat me, Bo Jiden. You're scary. So scary.
And wanted it followed by a goat karma. We got it for you. No problem.
You've got karma.
Sir Michael Klink is up next.
Klink?
Clink.
Clink.
Oh, gone. Lombard, Illinois. ITM guys. Okay, I can take a hint. All the Hogan's Heroes talk last show. It's been a while since my last donation. Aha. It drummed up a donation. If you could play Fletcher yelling Hogan, that would.
That doesn't exist.
I don't think it does either. We had Fletcher do all the stuff based on the Hogan.
Based on Hogan, but we never actually. But you know what? As I was, because I looked just to make sure, Fletcher has done some outrageous stuff for us. If you don't mind, yeah, let's start. We had that one, and we had.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to rumble-ize!
It's a little bit funny.
No, it's not!
He has done so much. Like
John Fletcher.
Oh, I don't know where that came from. Oh, this is a good one.
Happy birthday.
Anyway, no, we don't have that one. So you just got a nice.
He'll send one in.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so.
All right.
Oh, that was it? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that was easy. Wait, he wanted, no, wait a minute. Is that, oh, you, did we miss Massimo? I think we missed Massimo. Yeah.
We missed something?
Yeah. Massimo Cataneo.
Oh, I missed Massimo. Okay. You can read that one.
He's from Noosa Heads in Queensland, Australia. John and Adam, please expect this bag of threes. That's 333.33 from Massimo from Kin, Queensland, Australia. The equivalent of Gulch. For my Dame and I. Goat karma for everyone because we will need it and donate every once in a while, people. Ciao. Thank you.
You've got karma.
I believe that was ciao.
What did I say?
Ciao.
Okay. Ciao. Ciao. Ciao.
Sir David in Grapevine, Texas. Switcheroo for Dame Karen. Okay. We can do that.
Yep. Done.
New Jersey and Big Goat to my best girl, the newly minted Dame Karen, who will be celebrating her birthday on 3/13 as a Dame. Okay, as a birthday, too. I'm not sure she's on the list. You should put some yellow in here. I know this isn't the exact ring she keeps asking for, but hopefully it will do for now. No Agenda has been the official podcast of the road trip, and as we come to realize our exit strategy of life on the road, we look forward to many more years and at least one more presidential campaign. Season of shows.
Wishful thinking.
That's coming. Her placeholder name will be Dame Karen, Keeper of the Travel Hounds, and she'll have a Pinotage from the Stellenbosch region and Blacken Red Snapper and asparagus. Oh, I see. Okay, I was confused by the. Yeah, she's getting a ring, but she's getting our ring. She wants a wedding ring.
I get it. Now we understand. Now the monkey comes out of the sleeve. We got it.
And black and red snapper and asparagus. Happy birthday, Dame Karen.
I was going to ask you, we had a wine the other night. We were invited to a dinner. And I enjoyed this very much. I wanted to mention it to you to ask you what you thought. It was a Spring Mountain Vineyard Élevette 2004. Are you familiar?
Well, Spring Mountain Vineyard is a very famous place. It was the literal set for the soap opera Falcon Crest.
Oh, I love Falcon Crest. With Lorenzo. Yeah.
They were a very popular winery back in the 70s when they first cropped up. And they've always had decent wine. I haven't had a Spring Mountain wine probably for 20 years, so I can't tell you much.
But it, well, because it was a 2004, so literally almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It was great. It was really dynamite.
Was it a Cabernet?
Yes.
What kind of characteristics did it have? Did it taste like a Cabernet or taste like a Merlot?
No, like a Cabernet. It was bold, I would say, about medium. Not, you know, if you had smooth tannic, it was dry, a little bit acidic, tasted notes of blackberry, plum, dark fruit, oak, tobacco, chocolate.
Okay, that's enough.
Little leathery, earthy smoke. Yeah. Reading from the app.
Burnt Haitian orange is my all-time favorite.
Edward Musiel of Waterford, Michigan, 222.10, row of ducks and a stick. In return for hours of binge listening, in the spirit of Red Pilled America, support what you love or it goes away. This is so true. F cancer, yes. F cancer for Derek Hunter, he says.
You've got karma.
Words, true words were never spoken, Edward. Thank you.
Yeah, actually, that's quite something to note. Brian Agro in Cumberland, Michigan. ITM, please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
By the way, his donation is 21687, and I should, if I didn't mention it, but our Texan is 313, the switcheroo for Dame Karen. I don't know if I said the price.
Oh, probably not.
Cumberland, okay. Maine, by the way, not Cumberland, Michigan. Cumberland, Maine. ITM, please de-douche me. A possible exit strategy for you. He's got the de-douching already.
Yep, sorry.
Turn the after show more from COVID.
What are you reading? No.
I'm trying to figure out what he's saying.
He says, turn the after show mixes from COVID into a Broadway musical. Can you not read? It just says.
Oh, no. I've got blurry vision this morning for some reason.
All right.
Please call my brother Dan a douchebag. Douchebag. Bring back the 3x3, Jingles 3x3, and John's OTG. OTG, gonna OTG. That's not mine. That's just my song. Brian Agro of Cumberland, Maine. Well, bring back the 3x3, Jingles 3x3. Okay, he wants to
support the show. Send your cash. You will obey.
And now it's time for 3x3. Experiment by JC.
That's what he's talking about.
Comparing stories from ABC, CBS, and NBC. The never ending 3x3.
And here's what he asked for.
John C. Dvorak, Baker, Light, Pride. Today's Teddy K. He's an OTG kind of guy.
Wait, that's not the one. I think it's this one. No. This is the one.
OTG going OTG.
That's your song, baby, right there.
OTG kind of guy.
Yeah, and then you did a bit on OTG.
Yeah.
I'm an OTG.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. Because we lost everybody to TikTok. So we, now we're just telling people to not listen at 2x speed. You know, not kill yourself. Thank you, Brian. Nice idea. Yeah, not going to happen. We do have some. I received five end-of-show mixes, all beautiful songs. I received a couple, from Sir Brian with an Eye, which are meant to be the equivalent of shoving bamboo sticks under your fingernails, John, so I'm going to refrain from playing that. But it was good. It was good by the old standards. So get your singing caps on, people. Sir Baron John Helmer from Shawnee, Kansas, our last donation. This is very short. 8 donors for executive and associate executive producers. This is very, very poor showing.
Yes, 7, actually.
You're right, 7. We're 215.37 in the morning. John and Adam sending value for value, $200 plus a show donation of 15.37. Oh, that's an interesting way to do that. I like that. No jingles, but I'd like a shot of sales karma to meet quota for the second half of our fiscal year. Thank you for your courage, Sir Baron John Helmer, Shawnee, Kansas. So I will give you some of that sales karma.
You've got karma.
So we're going to go real quick here. Through the $50 donation, John's going to give it to you while I get set up for our meetups. Everything's short today. It'll be very, very
$102,
short.
$102. Yeah, they are. The meetups are short, too. $102.85 comes from Peter Regishnig.
We love this guy. We can't put
we
it.
Nobody can pronounce
give
his
give us
name.
A pronunciation guide, brother. We're struggling.
From Thornton, Colorado.
We're struggling.
Adam Bergener in Copperas Cove, Texas. 100. You should know how that goes. Anonymous. I got that one in Voorhees, New Jersey. 100. Shirley in Gurneyville. Oh, I'm sorry, Gurneyville.
Yeah, there you go.
It used to be called Gurneyville when I was a kid. They always flood. It's flood city. 100. Boom. Kevin McLaughlin, Locust, North Carolina. $80.08.
Love that guy.
Chris O'Hara in Hummelstown, Pennsylvania. $77.73. I'll get a count on Kevin McLaughlin's record.
Okay.
It's getting into the Guinness book.
You know, we could probably enter that.
Yeah.
It's worth trying.
Worth a shot. Devin Rotter, Painesville, Washington, 75. Peter, wait a minute. St. Peter. Peter's on again from Peter Reichich in Thornton, Colorado. Huh. He's back with 69.34. Not at all public school teachers. I don't know what that means. Sir Kevin McLaughlin's back with 6.006.
A small boob.
Small boobs.
Nice.
If it wasn't for these two guys, we'd be doing poorly.
Yeah.
Michael Bundy in Knoxville, Tennessee, 6.006, also small boobs. Adam keeps ragging on vasectomies.
No, John, I don't do that. That's John. What are you talking about? I'm father of 8 human resources who had the snip to be done with kids. The jokes are just part of accepting consequences of the choices we make. I don't rag on them. I'm proud of you.
You've done well. Yeah. You've done well. You've done your part.
Good
Six
job.
Kids.
Yeah, you should just, I mean, you must be tired, brother. That's all I can think.
Third day, he's probably still tired.
Yeah.
Norristown, Pennsylvania, 55-55. Clock boy. Forget about clock boy.
Clock boy has a message for us. Don't forget to set your bombs forward 1 hour. Oh, man. I love. Remember Obama? He had clock boy come to the White House.
Oh, yeah. Clock boy, the phony. Highland Heights in Kentucky is where this clock boy comes to 55-10. Yeah, then next thing you know, he moved to Libya.
Mm-hmm.
This is the clock boy situation. Is what got me kicked off initially from the
from Twitter.
Neil Laporte show.
Yeah, because you were saying it was bull crap and they were all in on clock boy.
Oh, yeah. They bought clock boy hook, line, and sinker, which is what you can expect on most podcasts.
Yeah, not this one.
David Schwingeninger. In Woodbridge, Virginia, 50. These are $50 donors. There's not too many of them. Margaretha and Eden Hood in Orangevale, California. Carrie Cunningham in Warrenton, Virginia. Gavin McGoldrick in San Francisco, California. Fletcher Scafey in Williston, North Dakota. Gary Mao in Woodland Hills, California. Michael Wendell in Mattawan, New Jersey. Chasen Ibarra in Northridge, California. Stephen Crummy in El Cajon, California. Sir, 33 megahertz in Kalowa, I think it's Kalowa, BC. And it's got a funny little note there. And then William Dolgay, last but not least, 31 total donations in Bristolville, Ohio. Really poor. I don't understand why it fell off like that.
Well, it's because people are like, man, no more good end of show mixes. We're not going to donate.
Well, they're going to get a good one today.
Apologies, everybody. What happened is some douchebag unleashed a DDoS attack on our stream. The minute we hit the donations, because it's funny, you know, it's funny to do that. Why don't we not stream anymore? I'm tired of it. I'm tired of trolls. I'm tired of the stream being attacked. We're under attack, John.
You love it.
Was that it? That was it, right? That was the total.
Yeah, that's it. That's our whole group of well-wishers and supporters for show 1537. I want to thank each and every one of them for helping.
Yeah, make no mistake. We love you. Thank you for supporting our show. Thank you for supporting your show. It is, after all, the best podcast in the universe because of you. If you'd like to learn more about where you can donate,
Dvorak.org/NA.
And a special thanks to our executive We had three executive producers, four executive producers, and three associate executive producers. Hey, you're going to look good on the credits today. They are forever credits. They are will stay with you for as long as you live and beyond. Register them at imdb.com. They are accepted there. You'll see lots of heavyweights in the entertainment industry have these credits. Of course, I am your LinkedIn or on your resume. It all looks good. And unlike the phonies in Hollywood you'll be watching tonight at the Oscars, we will vouch for you if anyone ever questions them. Thank you for supporting the No Agenda Show for episode 1537.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Well, we're going to keep everything short today. Dave Bassor wishes his grandson, Michael Big Mike Bassor, a happy birthday. He turned 3 on the 10th. Oh, how lovely. And Sir David, keeper of the Travel Hounds, wishes Dame Karen a happy birthday. Her birthday is tomorrow, and we say happy birthday for everybody here at the back office and the front office of the best podcast in the universe. And we have one dame to bring up on onto the... Now, she's getting a ring today. Not the ring she maybe wants, but it'll be a good start, this ring.
Yep. Here you go.
Yes, because you're getting double-teamed by the blades there. Karen, step on up on the podium, please. Thanks to the man who you would like to be your husband. He's getting a step in the right direction with this one. He has supported you in the amount of $1,000 or more. Therefore, we are very proud to pronounce you today as Dame Karen, keeper of the Travel Hounds. For you, we've got Rent Boys and Chardonnay. I don't think you need the hookers and blow. Certainly not for your man, though. We don't want to make a mistake there. Also, we've got Pinotage from the Stellenbosch region and black and red snapper and asparagus. Along with that, in case you want it, vodka and vanilla. We got some bong hits and bourbon. We got some ginger ale and gerbils. We got breast milk and pablum. But you might enjoy the mutton and mead and scurry on over to noagendanation.com/rings. Anyone can go take a look at these. They're beautiful rings. They're signet rings, so you can seal your official correspondence with it. We do supply some wax for that along with your official certificate of authenticity. And thank you again for becoming a dame, and thank you to your future husband for supporting us and supporting you here on the No Agenda Show.
No Agenda! Yeah.
We have no meetup reports, but we do have a promo, so let's play that.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled programming to bring you an urgent announcement from the Pacific Northwest. The North Idaho Sanity Brigade will return to their regularly scheduled third Thursday Nay Day meetup at the Selkirk Abbey in Post Falls. And remember, folks, listening to podcasts at 1.5 makes you a Mary.
A Mary? That's an insult they haven't heard since the 40s.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what that insult is.
A sissy, I guess. Yeah, Mary, I guess. Monday, we have a meetup scheduled for you at in Springfield, Missouri, 6 o'clock at Blair's All-American Sports Bar and Grill. That's Springfield, Missouri. By the way, you can find all of these or read along if you want to at noagendameetups.com. On Tuesday, Pretty Fly for a Pie Guy. Ah, yes, John, 314. Pie Day, Tuesday. Forgot it again, bro.
Well, how did I forget it again? Today's the what?
Yeah, but you can't do it on Thursday. Another failed promotion from your No Agenda Show. 5:30 at Greenlee Pizza Company in Greenlee, Colorado. March 15th, Wednesday, Fort Wayne Red Pillars Club 33. They meet at 6:33 at Ziano's Italian Eatery. It's on DuPont Road in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Oh, the Indians, man, they're great. Hoosiers. And then on our next show day, Thursday, the Tucson Ladies and Gentlemen Start Your Livers pre-St. Patrick's Day meetup. You know what that's going to be about. That's at 4 o'clock at Canyon's Crown in Tucson, Arizona. Dame Beth organizing for you. Also on the next show day, North Idaho Sanity Brigade. You just heard their promo right there, Selkirk Abbey, post Idaho Falls. Also on Thursday, the Mealworms Are for Chickens, Not Children Conference, 6:30 at Lincoln's Roadhouse, Denver, Colorado. Charlotte's Thirsty Third Thursday, coming up at 7 o'clock, Edge Tavern, Charlotte, North Carolina. And then we have, March 17th, Gary, Indiana? Are you kidding me? Gary, Indiana? My goodness, I want a meetup report from Gary, Indiana. The Indiana's out of control. St. Louis, Missouri on the 17th. Oklahoma City on the 18th. Point Mugu, California. Is it Point Mugu? On the 18th, Mount Laurel Township, New Jersey. Blue Island, Illinois. Chicago on the 18th. Star, Idaho on the 18th. Sheep Shaput. She's Schaupt. She Schaupt, Bavaria, Germany. She Schaupt. Go ahead, hit me with a Hogan.
Hogan!
Also on the 18th, Cincinnati, Ohio, Independence Township. I mean, we have just, it's all the way through March, with the all the way through April. I think we even have May. We have all over the world. Tom's River, April 15th. Oh my God, Mill Stomping Grounds. It's No Agenda Meetups. This is where you get to be with your community. If you feel you don't fit in, and let's be honest, most of us don't. If you're listening to the No Agenda Show, you're different than most. But there may be a few around you. There may be more than you know, even in Gary, Indiana. NoAgendaMeetups.com is where you can find your community near you. Remember, connection is protection.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days.
Bom, bom, bom.
You want to be where you want me. Triggered on health fame. Everybody feels the same.
Always like a party. I came ready for bear with my ISOs today. What do you have?
It's good because I really didn't have much, but I got a couple. But why don't you play yours first and see if I can top them?
Okay. I start off with this one.
Now, my baby, shut up.
Okay. Okay.
So much bullshit. We're drowning in it.
A little crude.
Truth and justice are on our side.
Kind of like that one.
It's a little muted.
Really crazy stuff.
That's Amy.
I like that one.
How about this one?
It activates your amygdala.
Come on. Come on. And then?
The good guys are the bad guys.
There you go. I like crazy stuff, and I like it activates your amygdala. Those two are good.
I like crazy stuff because it reflects the show.
Okay.
Really crazy stuff.
All right. What do you have?
Well, I have a door shutting that I clipped from something. This ISO door shows that we're shutting the door.
Hold on. Let me just, if you want a door, I got, a door. That was door close. Door close. I got a door close for you. That's a door.
No, closed. That sounds like a cartoon door.
And your other ISO?
Yeah, this I think is a good ending to the show because it tells you what the show is all about. Instructive.
There we go.
Really instructive.
Nah.
Really crazy stuff.
Are we really instructive or really crazy stuff?
Okay, I think mine's clearer.
Yeah, but that doesn't
matter. But you're right. Yeah, go with crazy.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Yo, this is interesting. It's been 3 years. It's been 3 years since this crazy period started.
These are the sites the nation will never forget. The devastation from COVID-19 leaving its mark on millions of families. But 3 years later, this trusted resource tracking the pandemic for all to see is gone. Johns Hopkins University posted its final update before discontinuing its COVID tracker because of a lack of available data. CBS News chief medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook points out even if the spotlight is...
John LaPook? Hold on.
John LaPoop.
Because of a lack of available data. CBS News chief medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook points out even if the spotlight is dimmed, COVID is not over.
Oh!
There are still hundreds of people dying each day in the United States. The question is, how do we start getting back to a more normal daily life?
The virus isn't going away. Neither has the pain of the 1.1 million lives lost to COVID in this country. But the pandemic's impact on our everyday lives is fading. The Biden administration plans to end the COVID public health emergency declaration in May. Not fast enough for conservatives who opposed vaccine mandates.
We chose freedom over Fauciism.
The pandemic changed some parts of American life forever. Plus, there's the toll on public trust.
There has been a devastating collision of public health and politics. And that's something we're going to have to address with better communication, better explanation, and better investment in our public health system.
Do we actually have a public health system? Is that a correct characterization?
That's a good question. I have no idea if we. I don't know that. No.
I mean, the NIH.
I think the UK, there's local. There's systems.
Yeah. We don't have a public health system.
I don't think so.
We got public health control.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Huh.
No, we don't think we have.
We're talking about public health. Let's do the fluoride report and get that out.
Oh, I heard about this. It's like, isn't it a lawsuit or something taking place?
Well, let's find out.
Okay, here we go. Oh, may I just say, early days of No Agenda, I was moaning and groaning about fluoride in the water.
NTD reached out to the HHS for comment, but didn't immediately hear back. During fall of last year, a U.S. district court judge lifted a stay on a protective order. That order shielded the NPT's recent study on the toxicity of fluoride from release. Most recently, in a February meeting, the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences agreed to publicize the NPT's report. The institute is expected to post the report on NPT's website before March 15th. The posted documents could play a major role in the second trial phase of the ongoing legal battle. A previous review on fluoride.
I'm sorry, by the way, for some reason I played report two first, but we'll just finish it.
Conducted by the NPT, found that fluoride is presumed to be a cognitive neurodevelopmental hazard to humans. However, the report said that conclusions were based on a higher amount of fluoride that is found in U.S. drinking water. Advocates of fluoride use argue it could prevent tooth decay. The next court hearing in the case is scheduled for April 11th.
I really apologize. This is the first clip that should have been played prior.
A study on the potential dangers of fluoride is expected to be released soon as part of a lawsuit against a government agency. According to plaintiffs, the Department of Health and Human Services previously blocked the study's release.
The Fluoride Action Network, or FAN, filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, back in 2017. FAN is trying to ban the use of fluoride in public water supplies in the U.S. The National Toxicology Program, or NPT, conducted a study on fluoride's toxicity. However, the NPT hasn't publicized the study yet. Internal emails seem to indicate that the study wasn't published because the federal government interfered in its publication. The attorney for the plaintiffs received internal CDC emails through a Freedom of Information Act request. The emails were quoted in this court filing, stating ASH Levine has put the report on hold until further notice. ASH Levine is a reference to the United States Assistant Secretary of Health, Rachel Levine. The attorney claims that the emails confirm that the CDC was opposed to the NPT releasing the report and that leadership at the top levels of the Department of Health and Human Services intervened to stop the report from being released.
Wow. Bombshell.
They're trying to kill us.
Well, we always knew that. I mean, the way I've always heard the story is fluoride in your water is a runoff product from heavy industry.
Yeah.
Aluminum being one of them. In order to hoodwink the people into putting it into their own water, they say, well, you know, it's good for your teeth. It'll protect your teeth.
Yeah. Turns out there's no evidence of any of this.
Do you know, do you know whose water is heavily fluoridated? Austin, Texas. Which explains why they're so liberal.
The best part of waking up is fluoride in my cup.
Well, Mimi single-handedly prevented the
fluoridization
mm-hmm. of the water supply up in the Port Angeles area.
Good for her.
Tracked it down to, you know, there's one company nationwide that's behind it. I think they have a contract with some contract to get rid of all this. It's hard to get rid of fluoride. But it's not hard to get rid of it if you can dump it in water supplies and let it just dilute it way down and, you know, nobody will notice.
Of course.
But this one company is Delta Dental.
Alex Jones has been on this for decades. And I knew that this was bad when I read A Legacy of Ashes, which is about the CIA, includes my uncle Don. And right there, it said that they would often, the CIA, would put fluoride into the enemy camp's water supply to make them nice and docile. Right. So that they could go and
yes, that is in that book.
Overrun the camp. And when I asked Uncle Don, is this all true? He said, yeah, that's pretty much the way I remember it.
Oh, The war on chicken.
Yep, the war on chicken continues.
Well, the recent bird flu outbreak is prompting health officials to consider rolling out new vaccinations for birds. Woo! As a highly contagious bird flu continues to mutate, the disease has devastated poultry populations. In this most recent outbreak, 58 million birds have died, an all-time high. The Biden administration has not officially approved these kinds of vaccinations for birds yet, but if it gets the green light, well, it actually won't be the first time. Many poultry are already vaccinated for diseases, including bronchitis.
I didn't know that we were vaccinating chickens against bronchitis. Now, Canada, I'm going to blame Canada. This is from Popular Mechanics. I'm not sure where they're reporting on it. A hybrid breed of super pigs. Super pigs! A mix of domestic pig and wild boar is running wild in Canada and are migrating south. Highly intelligent and possibly invincible super pigs are invading America. You know, we have a lot of wild hogs in Texas, and yeah. they are a real problem.
They're a super problem everywhere they show up.
Well, it's a super problem for the regular ones, but how about the super pigs?
Well, you know, we should kind of maybe get the kids in high school, teach them about gun safety, and then go out and kill these damn pigs.
The super pigs.
And eat them.
The super pigs have become.
I will say, by the way, baby wild boar.
Tasty.
Unbelievably tasty.
The super pigs, this is why they're highly intelligent. The super pigs have become adept at fending off recreational hunters, sometimes with entire sounders. That's a term for a group of pigs. Turning nocturnal to avoid the hunting. Other times the sounders will disperse, making them harder to locate or change their patterns and retreat to forest or wetlands. The best strategy at reining in the super pigs has been employing the Judas pig concept. Have you ever heard of the Judas pig?
Is that where they tag one pig?
Yeah, exactly. With a GPS collar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A Judas pig. Wow. Well, that's going to be interesting. Hunting at night, that's a whole different challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's going to be a problem.
Well, if they start showing up like raccoons, then you got something going on. So I found a clip. This is an interesting clip. It's got nothing to do with anything we've talked about. It's about the elections.
Okay.
And I thought this was a good rundown that we should all know, which is this is running. It says running foe, F-O-E. But this is from Brooks on Brooks and Shiel. And he actually explains something nicely because it keeps cropping up. Why do people, when they start running for president, they keep running and running when they should bail out? But no, it's not that easy to do. Listen to this.
He said the bigger thing is these Republicans have to know when to get out. How does that strike you?
Well, he's right in theory. It's a lot harder in practice, because if you're running for president, you're raising a ton of money. And so you build up these war chests, and suddenly a couple weeks go by, it doesn't look so good. A, do you want to look at your donors and say, sorry, you wasted your money? You're not allowed to give them the money back. And
what?
And you have to spend it that election cycle. And so it's actually hard to withdraw, because you have this pot of money there, and the instinct is to say, I'll just stay in. I've got this money. I might as well see what I got and spend it. And so since it's structurally hard to get out for this fundraising reason I've described, a lot of them are going to face the temptation to stay in longer than they should. And that will split the field. I think it's a real problem for anybody who does not want Donald Trump to be the nominee.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wasn't unfamiliar with it myself.
That's interesting. You know, Bobby Kennedy is hinting at a run. Of course, you can't actually say I'm running, because then there's all kinds of changes with the money, I guess.
Oh, yeah, you get yourself in trouble.
Right.
You can only hint, and there's certain ways you can hint.
Well, the hint is out because they're looking for money. Let me see, what was it? Where was this? I had it somewhere. But it's like, you know, oh, here it is. What is the website? TeamKennedy.com. Join Robert F. Kennedy. Join Bobby's movement for a free and fair America for all. You know, the minute we said, hey, Bobby Kennedy, I might vote for that guy. people are like, man, he's tied to Big Pharma, tied to this.
Those are the same guys who quit the chat room during the donation.
Exactly the same. Well, then another 1,000 got DDoSed out of existence. Stupid trolls. Someone does that on purpose just to piss me off.
They are successful.
Yeah, it worked. It worked.
Well, the last clip I've got for the day is the, at least get this, another thing. This is the reparations. We have a situation in California where nobody else is doing it. We never were a slave state. We're always a neutral state. But that's beside the point.
I love it. Yeah, you're gonna give reparations to all black Americans.
People $50,000, every black guy in the state who qualifies. And then again, making them qualify is an issue because, well, some of them don't qualify. But we're working on it. We're going to give everybody, and everybody, by the way, all the black community, the entire black community is all for this.
The California Task Force Studying Reparations for Black Residents wants to revive a Reconstruction-era agency as part of its first-in-the-nation statewide reparations plan.
$50,000 seems a little insulting.
Well, that's just one of the suggested amount. Some people have suggested $500,000.
Yeah, I've seen that. Resident. I saw $5 million. I thought I saw $5 million initially.
There, that could have been in play.
Yeah.
The higher it goes, the less likely it's going to happen. Everyone's got to have to deal with that. $50,000 to me is a lot for someone who didn't do jack shit.
You know, I've talked with Mo about this often. By the way, he has that horrible flu, so we didn't have a show this week. He's down and out. And he says the amount is, you know, first of all, he says, you know, how come we can do the, Inflation Reduction Act for $1.5 trillion? He wants a T word. He wants reparations for all black Americans has to equal up to $1 trillion, but only if there's atonement. It has to be $1 trillion and you have to say you're sorry. And he bases that on a legal thing, which has some validity. But this $50,000, really? And then what happens? Then it spreads to other states, and every state's going to do that? And this is California money, or is it? Oh,
it's going to spread to every state because nothing is going to happen.
Right. And unfortunately, the here's your $50,000. It's in Silicon Valley Bank.
Stock.
Stock. Oh, it's better. Silicon Valley Bank stock. Oh, goodness. Goodness gracious. I do have this one clip, something going on in Canada. We've been tracking this for quite a while. Bill C-18. And from what I understand, Bill C-18, the idea is it would force companies who publish bits and links of news stories to for Canadian companies to pay Canadian news organizations money for the links they put up. From what I understand, let's listen to the clip and then we can figure out what's going on.
Google is flexing its digital muscles on some Canadians, and now Heritage Committee MPs want them to answer for it. The MPs have summoned top executives to testify on Monday after the tech giant moved to temporarily limit news access for about 4% of its Canadian users. It's just a test in the event that Parliament passes Bill C-18, the Online News Act. It will compel tech giants to compensate media companies for republishing and linking to their content on their platforms. It's something that some experts are opposed to, including my next guest. Michael Geist, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So Google is throttling access to Canadian news for some of its users in response to this legislation. If this bill is passed in its current form, do you think Canadian news will just disappear from Google entirely?
I think it's a real possibility if we're honest about it. I mean, all they've done, I'm not sure that throttling is necessarily the right word. I mean, obviously, they've removed the links to some Canadian news sources for about 4% of their user base. But given how popular they are, that still affects quite a number of people. But given the costs associated with this legislation, the government envisioning that Google could be required alongside Facebook to pay 35% of the news expenditures for every news outlet in the country just for linking to their content, I don't think we should be particularly surprised that a company like Google would say, listen, if that's the requirement, if you link, you have to engage in that kind of payment or don't link,
they're going to at least look at the prospect of not linking at all.
Yeah, so they have to pay 35% of the news organization's costs.
Hey, welcome to 1990. Check the calendar. We went through this.
In Canada or just in America? I remember.
In America, Canada, around the world. The whole thing about links. Links, yeah. You can't link to my content. You're stealing content. You're stealing photos.
Deep linking is bad. It's killing the music industry or whatever. No, that was home taping.
Yeah. Everything's, yeah. So this started with the Frame, the long lost Frame, which they used to,
Frames. Frames.
Frames are a classic.
We still use Frames and the Blink tag here and there.
Oh, the Blink tag's gone.
Only on the .htm.
I think the
website.
Cat running back and forth across the screen is the best.
No. What was Whack the Monkey? Punch the Monkey and Whack the Mole. That's what it was. I remember.
These guys are idiots. This is telling you how stupid the media is at the highest levels.
Correct. And because the media benefits, it's not going to benefit the small news organizations. It's going to benefit the big guys, as it always does.
It's not going to benefit anybody because you're going to get cut off.
And actually,
that's what Google's going to do. No links to you.
And who cares?
Very easy to do.
Who cares about Google? It's like
who cares about anybody linking? But they're trying to nail everyone who links. So screw those. Anyone who doesn't want to be linked, put a little robot tag in there. Don't link. It should be on there, probably in the code.
Yeah, Google is going down, man. It's going to take a while, but people are on TikTok. No one cares. No one cares about Google. No one cares about Facebook. Have you noticed that Meta is just no longer discussed? I think they shut that thing down. I think that you're not going to hear about Meta and the Metaverse at all.
If I didn't have a dollar already hanging on the
you'd
Oscars
bet me on that
tonight.
One. All right. Well, we'll go for the Oscars first, and then we'll see how we fare later on. It's about averages, really, for me. Just got to average out a dollar a year, which is pretty much what we're doing so far.
Well, on today's show, for sure.
Today's show. Well, support us, Dvorak.org/NA. We appreciate everyone who did support us. It's always, always helpful. Always, always appreciated. We have end of show mixes. Only two. If you don't hear your mixes, because they're long. If you do the songs, that's great, but you can cut at least one verse out. And now I got to deal with that. Hey Citizen and Phantomville both brought us outstanding end of show mixes, the kind that John loves. And up next, noagendastream.com. If you're still in the troll room, trollroom.io, Behind the Schemes with Booberry and Lavish, coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where as I look out on the scene, it's gloomy, but it's not wet. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Thursday, right after Pi Day, with another episode of Deconstruction, tailor-made for you. Remember us at Dvorak.org/NA. Until then, adios, mofos, and such, and a hooey hooey!
John C. Dvorak gazing out of his window, wondering why the end of show mixes suck. He recalls the time the funny jams get them satisfied. Seems those times are gone and now it hurts him so much. No agenda has a little mastodon instance that the No Agenda listeners inhabit. Every day they post as many memes as the server can handle, till the admins have to crack down and cap it. Listen to me. All you No Agenda trolls aren't making end of show mixes like you used to. Some of you post too many memes on No Agenda social, and some of you are listening too fast. Another user with a podcast obsession is subscribing to his favorite feed.
He navigates his way to edit the setting to increase the rate of audio playback speed. One day he sets it up to 2.5 times to maximize the information he gets. His health is fading and he doesn't know why. It's causing damage to his personal relationships. Y'all don't hear me. All you know, agenda trolls aren't making end of show mixes like you used to. Some of you post too many memes on No Agenda Social, and some of you are listening too fast.
Yeah, okay, I wasn't even going to bring this up, but John is really out of sorts today. He feels that the end of show mixers are no good, they suck, it's not anything the way it's supposed to be. It should be songs, parody songs, which are very hard to do, which we got a lot of during lockdown, but you just hate everything that we have, everything, you hate it all, it's horrible.
There's not one mix in the entire collection.
Of course, many of these trolls you can also find or reach or follow on noagendasocial.com, which I also will say is getting a little rowdy. And people are a little unhinged. Have you seen any of this behavior on noagendasocial.com? A lot of people just posting memes all day long. Oh my goodness. It costs a lot of disk space. People don't care. You guys are very unthankful, ungrateful. And by the way, stop DMing me. I do not respond to DMs on noagendasocial.com.
I just don't notice them because they don't have a little flag. There's no flag. Mm-hmm. So I click on it on accident, and boom, there's a bunch of DMs that all backed up.
All you know, agenda trolls aren't making end of show mixes like you used to. Some of you post too many memes on No Agenda Social, and some of you are listening too fast.
John's complaining that there's no mixes. Adam's trying to give us a chance. COVID's a ball, we're all sick of war. We have to go back to it in Anne's Christ. You know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. We end the show mixes as though we're crucified. Men trying to go in those toilets. Y'all used to think that was weird. But haven't you heard? Win this world, even with balls and a beard. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. Doing it to show me it's gonna crucify me. Pfizer wants to give me your blood clot. China wants to steal my ID. Ukraine wants my cash. I got a rash. And everybody blames it on me. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. Bring in the show mixes. It's gonna crucify me.
I'm sure your dream is better than all the after show.
Yeah, okay. What's the reason to bring this up?
So, listen when we talk about lockdowns. When we said the jab was a scam, 15 million cities are coming. Better get out while you can. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. You're gonna crucify me.
Dvorak.org/NA
Really crazy stuff.